Okay, great. Well, I'd like to call this commission meeting of the California Boating and Waterways to order. My name is Tom Peer. I'm the chair of the commission. And this meeting is being held at Sacramento State Aquatic Center in Gold River, California, as well as virtually on Zoom. Constituents who cannot be in here in person can participate on Zoom, and instructions will be provided shortly. As a reminder to everyone, this meeting is live webcast and can be viewed at www.cal-span.org. That's www.cal-span.org. The archive video will also be available at the cal-span.org website. So before we get started with today's agenda, please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, next I'd like to ask the clerk to take roll call for the commission.
Thank you, Chair Peer. We do not have any commissioners attending virtually at this time, so I will call your names and just say if you are here or if I don't hear from you, I'll know you're not. Tom Peer, Chair.
Present.
Thank you. Jose Gonzalez, Vice Chair. Jose is not present. Catherine Hawkins, not present. Excuse me. Maggie Hallahan?
Present.
Thank you. Maricela Rosales?
Present.
Gonzalo Medina?
Present.
And Hampus Isader?
Present.
Thank you. We have five commissioners present, and we have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Will the clerk now read the instructions regarding public comments on agenda and non-agenda items?
Thank you, Chair Peer. I will provide some information on how public participation will be organized for today's Boating and Waterways Commission meeting. First, I'll cover the in-person meeting protocols. In order to provide comment on agenda items in person, members of the public are requested to fill out a green public comment form, which can be found at the back table. And if you'd like to provide comment on non-agenda items in person, members of the public are requested to fill out the blue public comment form, which is also on the back table. Please turn in all completed forms to me. Each speaker will have 3 minutes to present their comments. And now I'll present the procedures for using Zoom if you're watching virtually. If you wish to make a verbal comment on one of the agenda items, if you want to make a comment during a non-agenda comment period, you can use a Zoom webinar app or call in by phone. The commission will hear your comments from the in-person attendees first and then public comments from attendees on Zoom. If you're currently watching the webcast on calspan.org but you want to make comments, please register for the Zoom webinar to receive your unique ID and password or phone number if you wish to call. Information can be found on the notice, agenda, or dbwparks.ca.gov on the commissioner's webpage. To make a public comment on agenda items, please virtually raise your hand at the beginning of the presentation to let us know you wish to speak. To do this, if you're using a computer or laptop, use the raise hand button in the Zoom webinar app, or if you're calling in by phone, dial *9 to raise your hand. If you're calling in by phone, you will use *6 to unmute your device. When the public comment period starts, the order of commentators will be determined by the registration list and then who raises their hand first. I will call on each of you by name and then unmute your device. For members of the public that call in, you will be identified by the last 3 digits of your phone number. Please note, you will not appear by video when you make your comments. If you experience any technical difficulties, please call or text to the area code 805-801-3676 or email it@agpvideo.com so an IT person can assist you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Madam Clerk. And can I ask, do we have any local dignitaries that have made their presence noted here? I consider everyone in this room to be a dignitary,
just gonna say that.
By the way, for showing up to a Boating and Waterways Commission meeting.
Thank you, Chair. No, I haven't.
You're all to be commended. And then I'd like to introduce Ramona Fernandez, who's the Deputy Director of the Division of Boating and Waterways, Catherine Tobias, who is Senior Legal Counsel for State Parks and Recreation. And I don't know if Liz is running late or if she is, please.
Yes, Chair Pierce, she's running late. She'll be joining us shortly.
Okay, so Liz McGuirk, I think is how you pronounce it, is the Chief Deputy Director of California State Parks and Recreation. Okay, that said, we're going to move on to the next agenda item 4, and that would be what's described as my discussion. But just also on the agenda, it's more formally referred to as my report. And that report would be as follows. We, the commission and staff and many of you in the room, attended our workshop yesterday, which I think was very productive and very informative. And I did yesterday, but I will do again today. I really commend the staff, Karen, Ramona, Catherine, and of course, everyone else for facilitating that process. And we made, I thought, a tremendous progress on a number of subjects, not the least of which is the SAVE program, Surrendered and Abandoned Vessels. The boating launch facility programs, to a lesser extent, beach erosion and beach nourishment. But we had a very productive session on the budget and the direction the division seems to be unfortunately headed. And we had some great presentations on the budgetary process and sort of what the future holds for the division. So I thought... it was a great session, and everyone here was in attendance, and I appreciate my fellow commissioners making the travel and the time and everything to participate in that. Just sort of separate and aside from that, I have been in discussions with Congressman Garamendi's office, and he has taken a real keen interest in the boating community and in particular in the SAVE, Surrendered and Abandoned Vessels, programs. And he is working to, he's passed a couple of bills, as I understand, pertaining to various licensing and so forth. And he is now has a bill pending to try to get additional federal funding for the program, which, as many people may or may not know, and we're going to have a presentation on this later today, the division is pretty much overstrapped in terms of funding the grants for surrendered and abandoned vessels, and that's a major issue. So that said, I'm about to turn it over to my fellow commissioners for their reports, but I wanted to also just add I was in Morro Bay, and as many people who have been on the commission long enough know that I've always sought to have some kind of recognition as the chair of the commission on a sign. So if you can cue that photo I sent you. No, that's not it. Oh, man, the joke is lost. It's all about timing.
Excuse me, Chair Pierre, we did promise AGP that you would not provide last-minute photos.
I confirmed with him that they received it. All right, well, as I say, the moment is lost, which is a shame because I think it's – yeah, well, you can see it, but no one else can. Anyways, the moment is lost, so let's move on. So now we're going to move on to fellow commissioners' updates. Maybe we can get that loaded up at a later time. Please don't interrupt the other commissioners, though, with that, please, on the screen. So, okay, moving on in no particular order, Commissioner Medina, would you like to provide us with your activities update, please?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, DBW staff and the public here. Report on updates from Long Beach is we're heavily involved in preparation for LA 28 Olympics. There's an extensive amount of planning going on right now with respect to the programming and the role that public safety plays within that. Obviously, a huge security component to it, but also on the safety component of it. On the maritime side of it, the Coast Guard is taking a significant responsibility for the maritime security along the coast there, but the local agencies are playing a big role as well. So a lot of that happening right now, and it feels like it's just around the corner. So that's what Long Beach is heavily involved with now. I do want to echo the chair's comments about how valuable the budgeting workshop yesterday was, especially with respect to being more informed about what types of solutions may be necessary in the future if we are to remain solvent, but also on the officers that were present and the impact that the budget has on our frontline officers that are doing the mission of providing safety out there day in and day out. And when you hear from them directly, you recognize that these budgeting issues are not abstract. They're real, and they're having direct impacts on our people that are keeping our recreational boaters safe. With that, thank you. I'll give it back to you, Chair.
And, Commissioner Medina, could I just ask you to please, you're with Long Beach Lifeguards, public safety. Maybe you can just sort of.
Yeah, I'm Marine. Yeah, sorry. I represent Long Beach, and in my day job, I'm the Marine Safety Chief for the Long Beach Fire Department. Yeah.
That equals being the lifeguard chief.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah. All right, Commissioner Hallahan, can I ask you please to provide your report?
Hello, everyone. Thank you for being here, and thank you, staff, and everyone for that great workshop yesterday. Really answered a lot of questions, and I'm sure some of that will come up today as well and onward. I believe that's going to be available online, so you can, if you want to see the workshop, there was a lot of data presented by the accounting people. Jed did a great presentation and helped really understand more of the political process for California State and funding. I am going to share two things. One of them is very sad news that in San Francisco Bay, there were 25 gray whales with vessel strikes died in 2025. It's the highest recorded number ever. And some of them were killed right in front of the San Francisco Sea Scout base, where I am a Sea Scout leader. I'm a licensed Coast Guard captain, so we were on the water. We saw dead whale bodies and called them in, and Coast Guard didn't even have a place to pull them onto the beaches because there were so many dead whales on the beaches around Angel Island. Angel Island is a state park, but they only allow one whale at a time to get pulled up onto a particular beach where the tide works. And so they couldn't even do the autopsies on all the whales. But California Academy of Sciences did 16 autopsies of the 25, and so they were all healthy whales. And there isn't a clear reason. One reason may be that they're being socialized down in the Cabo area, down Mexico, when they're having their babies. And when they are coming in, they're not as afraid of boats. So it's a huge issue. And San Francisco Bay does not have a speed limit. You go out the Golden Gate Bridge, and there's a vessel speed limit. And that has been recently negotiated as a, not a law, but, you know, people are asked to, and the larger ships have more heat seeking things to be able to know when whales are there, but our tourists and ferries in San Francisco Bay don't have that. So it's something that we need to work as a whole community because it's an endangered species and really important. So I would also like to say that a lot of people have been speaking and asking me about the report, the ad hoc report that Commissioner Estatter and I released in November at the last meeting. And so people are really kind of surprised by some of the numbers and the placements. You know, we did the California Boating Card and made a graph of where in every zip code and did it, normalized it with population so people could get an idea of who's getting the California Boating Card. And we'd like to update that. That was record data from last April, so we'll update that. And then possibly be able to add gender and age to that graph. Anyway, people liked seeing that overall data. So, we had some hypotheses as well, and people agreed and disagreed and had conversations about those hypotheses with us. So we really felt that was a good fruit from the efforts that we put into that ad hoc report. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Hallahan, for your report. And now I would like to turn my attention to Commissioner Rosales for your report, please.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everyone. Good morning. It's been interesting for me to work at the federal level. I am the California Associate Program Director at Conservation Lands Foundation, and a lot of the work that I've been encompassed in is a lot of the federal issues to public lands, specifically the California desert and Southern California. And because of what's going on, it has impacted the way that funding has been trickled down to state issues, and that has also impacted recreation and access and the conversations we're having with community members in Southern California, where many of them don't know what's going on because things are flying under the radar, which impacts the way that many of us in recreation and conservation do our work and how we message these issues out to the community. And yesterday I had an opportunity, or 2 days ago, excuse me, had the opportunity to attend the California Natural Resource Agency event, Outdoors for All, which was very much appreciated. We saw many different organizations, community members, and activists come together to talk about how we elevate state parks, how can we come together to really build coalitions to uplift the need for funding and capacity for Outdoors for All for Everyone. Whether you are a OHV user, you're a paddler, you're a hiker, you're a fisherman, or you're a boater in any way, but the impacts that we all feel are coming from the federal appropriations issues where their budgets are flat, but also because they're flying under the radar with the issues of privatizing public lands, trying to sell our public lands, trying to dismantle bedrock laws that protect national monuments, and so forth, are really interconnected to the work that we do here in California as well. And so, as many of you know, we are kind of highlighted in a way where we don't want to be highlighted, where, you know, federal funding is kind of wiggled in our faces, and at the same time, they want us to comply in ways that are not representative of all of California in different ways in the recreation community. And so my work is really trying to advocate and elevate those voices, whether they're small business owners, their outfitters, or just, you know, your local activist that is trying to understand all the things that are coming at them very quickly, and to respond to that in a way where it's fully representative of many different communities. I've also had the opportunity to talk to the local chambers in many Southern California mountain communities where they are interested in acquiring more information about the division, boating and waterways, the different safety programs, educational programs, because there's a lot of youth that are interested in becoming paddlers. I live really close to Silverwood Lake, and many of the youth that live up in Crestline and Lake Arrowhead don't have access to Silverwood Lake because we don't have a transit system. So I'm trying to work with some local nonprofits to really engage some of our youth up there to understand that there are recreational opportunities for them and for them to gain skills as a gateway and pathway to then work hopefully for state parks or for the national parks or other opportunities to work for the U.S. Forest Service. So that is my report. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Rosales. And now we will turn to Commissioner Idstadter for his report.
Thank you, Chair. And I'd like to report on a number of developments and activities that I have seen in my local boating communities of Ventura County and Los Angeles County since our last meeting. and I thought I'd do this by going from north to south. So starting up in Channel Islands Harbor in Ventura County, we have seen a number of really important dock replacements at some of the boating facilities and marinas in that harbor. And it's been just so encouraging to see old infrastructure, sometimes built in the 1960s and 70s, being replaced with brand new concrete docks that I believe could well last for 50 to 70 years. And I think that's excellent news for all of the boaters in Ventura County. In Marina del Rey in Los Angeles County, we're seeing similar progress on a different front, where they're starting to address some of the parking issues that I think have plagued not just the boating community, but just the general public that come to visit Marina del Rey. In particular, there's a large parking structure being built at what's known as Lot 4, so that will be interesting to follow. And then, as I think most of you know by now, I also try to spend a lot of time out there with recreational boaters. And I had the privilege of attending some of the boat parades over the holidays. And it was really interesting to see how some of our local boating communities were able to come together and attract not just boaters, but people curious about boating, local elected officials. I, just to give you one example, attended a boat parade down in Redondo Beach in South Bay, Los Angeles County, where we had the mayor, we had representatives of the California Coastal Commission, we had yacht club members, we had boaters, sailors, and just people from the general public curious about boating. And I think those are the kind of events that we need to see more of, right, where we bring together all of the stakeholders who I think should benefit from the positive changes that we're seeing out there. So I wanted to deliver this report because I'm conscious I've had a couple of sad reports about fires and fatalities, and I just wanted all of you to know that there is a lot of good progress as well taking place out there. And with that, back to you, Chair.
And I'll just note briefly that Commissioner Itzhatter is the designated representative for the marina communities. So he represents all marina owners. Well, represents, but you're the designated go-to person for marina owners. Okay, so that said, I'll close out the comments from the various commissioners, and we'll move on to the next item, which is item number six, which is the Deputy Director's report. So if I could ask Deputy Director Fernandez to make your report. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Peer. So good morning, everyone. And I do want to also echo the comments the commission made on the workshop. So I think it was a productive workshop as well. So we look forward to some of those conversations continuing, and hope that you all got, I'm glad to hear that you all got some good information or clarifications on how we at the state operate. I do want to kind of circle back on one thing that was mentioned yesterday. I think it was Commissioner Medina on the project. So when we talked about the projects and the bucket, and once we have determined what projects will be presenting to you all, and that you would get a list in visiting those, I just ask that you go as a private, you know, as not into your commission role with when visiting those proposed projects.
And these then, are, you know, just to clarify, these are the boating launch facility.
Yes, boat launch grants. Facility yeah, grants. We,
that's
yeah,
so got just sort yeah. of dropped out for so everyone
right.
understands.
So when, yes, thank you. So yes, so when yes, just as a private and so the public process during our commission and tour is when you could ask all the questions that you want, but you know, jot down, look, yes, go visit, but if you could not as your commission role.
Thank you, Director, mm-hmm. and that's understood.
The other reminder is administratively, please get your Form 700s in if you haven't already. Thank you. Next slide, please. So as Commissioner Itzader had mentioned about, you know, we talked about yesterday kind of the reduction here, reduction there, and, you know, where we are as a division. But I wanted to kind of go through 2025 and give you all a sneak peek of all the stuff that we were able to accomplish. So, as 2025, we continue to partner with many organizations. We continue to do the work that we do in terms of providing service to boaters and organizations. We participated at the national level with Operation Dry Water, which is an enhanced, it's an enhanced event that encourages boaters to leave, basically leave the booze on shore, don't recreate and don't drink and operate your boats out on the water. Last year, there were 36 local marine law enforcement agencies, along with the U.S. Coast Guard and stations and sectors. This, again, increased the awareness of boating under the influence and the dangers of drinking and boating. We also have secured partnership funding with our Aquatic Invasive Species Program, specifically the Aquatic Invasive Plant Control Program that is managed in the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta. And that has been about $5.2 million in a variety of reimbursable contracts. And you'll hear a little bit more about that program later. And our aquatic centers, 38 centers were funded with outreach focusing on kayak sailing, power boating, stand-up paddle boarding, and approximately 67,000 adults and youth received on the water training. This is an increase of 12% from 2024. And we also granted 17 agencies, law enforcement agencies or first responders with primarily purchases of patrol vessels and safety gear. Next slide, please. Another accomplishment we talked, Commissioner Rosales talked about federal funding. So yes, it has been a challenge over these last year on the state receiving federal funding. As you know, there's several agencies at the federal level that we receive funding for. Particularly is the RBA, the we call Recreational Boating Safety Grant. That's the one that's managed by U.S. Coast Guard, and it's through the Homeland Security Department. And in 2025, for several years, we had been in compliance with our grant on, as I mentioned in previous reports, through our state law not aligning with federal law, just updating our ABCs of boating, our publications, and in various laws. So we have been able to, this past year, we are now in full compliance with that grant. We have fulfilled all of the obligations that we had that were recommended by the U.S. Coast Guard and their state visit. So that was huge. That was, it took us several years to get through, as we mentioned, the process in government of getting through and with the administrative law, changing our regulations. We also had to change statute as part of that as well. So we have applied for our 26 grant funds, so we are hopeful that we'll continue with receiving recreational boating safety grants. Next slide, please. And a reminder that, so that program, RBS grant funds our aquatic centers, our law enforcement equipment grants, which I believe you'll hear about today, our multimedia safety campaign that you see all over with billboards and media, our training, our law enforcement training program is also funded through that, and our incident reporting. So we're required to report all boating accidents to the U.S. Coast Guard, and that program is also funded through that that pot of money. Okay, next slide. So update on our regulations. Again, you've seen this talked to before. This is the fire extinguisher was our final regulation that we had to update. Oh, can you go back one slide? Thank you. Our fire extinguisher state regulations were the last that we needed to update to align with federal law. Those have now been, as of January 2026, those are now adopted as state, went through the state process and are approved. We are now working on our yacht and ship licensing program. So AB 8, let's see, make sure I get this one right. I think it's AB 849, AB 865, allowed the state to look at our licensing program. So our yacht and ship licensing program, as well as our for hire program, are two what we call consumer protection programs. So we license brokers and salespersons as well as for hire operators. So the for hire program has been free for those operators, and the yacht and ship licensing program hasn't been changed in probably 20 plus years. So AB 865 allowed the division then to look at making this program's cost neutral so that the programs can be self-sustainable and self-efficient in the future. So we have been working with small focus groups in those particular programs, and we are now ready with the yacht ship licensing program to move forward with an Office of Administrative Law, what we call rulemaking package, to go through the public process, then to align the fees for brokers and salespersons to be increased. The next, after that, we'll be looking at the for hire program. Next slide. So I do apologize that these slides are very small. So here is our data for our 2025. And again, we are still reviewing and going through this data. This is kind of a quick snapshot of where we are today. We'll get final numbers on that and we work with the Coast Guard probably April-ish, when we'll have final numbers that the Coast Guard then sends out on the national level. And that kind of gives the start of National Safe Boating Week, which is the second week of May, is when the Coast Guard will get all the data on the national level from all the states. So this is our data that we have to date on incidents. So 2025 season, we did see a significant improvement with fatalities. They are down about 15%. Injuries are about 27%. Total accidents last year have compared to 24, about 12%. So I think you have that in your sheet as well, so you can kind of see the larger.
Does the number on the right there say how many? So in the blue strip, and then it has a little number.
Yeah, it does.
That means, like, yes. Kayaking had 10 fatalities,
yes,
in 2025.
Yes, yes.
That seems like it has really dropped.
Yes. And again, this is data from today. We don't have complete data as we're still
putting in
on
December
and
November.
Yes.
Is there a life?
You know, guys, I'm sorry. Apologies. I don't mean to interrupt. I think we're sort of in this Q&A. Format we had yesterday, which was less formal. Yeah. So I'm just going to ask my fellow commissioners to hold your questions until the deputy director has completed her report.
Thank you, Chair Peer. Okay, next slide, please. So looking ahead, 2026, obviously we know that our priority is on the sustaining the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund, also ensuring that we can maintain federal funding with our Recreational Boating Safety Grant. That's the RBS grant. That's the one that has been primarily challenging this last year compared to the others. We believe we are on a good path there for continuing to participate in that program. There was some significant changes made in the terms and conditions, and so we are hopeful that we will continuing down that, to able to receive those funds. The Clean Vessel Act, CVA, that provides grants in our loans and grants. We have been successful in those. That program has continued for us to receive funding, as well as the Boating Infrastructure Grant Program. And then, as you all heard yesterday, the NOAA, which is the National Oceanic Atmospheres, thank you. we received funding for a grant for the Sacramento San Joaquin Delta specific for a project to assist us with the derelict vessel removal. And we hope, as you heard yesterday, Karen mentioned on, you know, it is specific for a project, so we are hopeful that we'll be able to continue to provide a project-specific area in the future to continue to take advantage of those grant funds. And let's see, what else is there? The Golden Mussel Task Force, we didn't get into that. You'll hear more about the Golden Mussel when, I don't want to steal their thunder, but we'll hear about the Golden Mussel efforts that the division is participating in when you receive that update from that program. But we are continuing to be a voice and participate heavily on the Golden Mussel Task Force at a steering committee level, which is at deputy director level of multiple agencies within the California Natural Resources Agency, as well as other agencies at the state and federal level. And we are also have developed a technical advisory group then to increase the mussel fee sticker. And again, you'll hear more of that program and those efforts when the team updates you on the quagga and zebra mussel infestation program. And then we also continue to look at ways of fee modernization, looking at ways to maximize revenue opportunities for newer practices to help reduce the dependency of the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. So we are looking at those as well internally. Next. Next slide, please. Just a little bit more on the efforts that we're doing for 2026. We'll obviously be continuing to look at our law enforcement training programs and meet the needs of the statewide need for specific law first responders and law enforcement training. We're fully implemented in our California Boater Card, so we'll also be looking this year at potential ways that we can improve that program now that we are in full implementation. I think we're about 450,000 participants in that card, in the program now. This year, California was chosen at the national level to be the recipient of providing an event or doing an event showcasing Operation Dry Water. So we'll be coordinating and partnering that effort with the state of Arizona as well as the state of Nevada in a tri-state effort to enhance an awareness for drinking and operating a boat. And next slide, please. And you've seen this many times, but just a reminder that, you know, as we work through the fiscal outlook of the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund, it really does take outreach, and we do take into consideration the feedback and the recommendations and the information that we receive from our stakeholders, from our partners, from the commission, as we look to try to solve the insolvency of the fund, the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. Next slide. And again, as I mentioned, upcoming priorities for us, we were looking at tentatively in March and April to hold those stakeholder engagement meetings for the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund sustainability efforts. We will be sending notices out. If you have interest of community members or organizations that are interested in that, once we send it out to you all, please forward the information. We want as much input from the boating public as we can during those engagements. And then, as I mentioned, also AB 102 was the provisions on the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund, well, the structure of the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. And that will conclude. I do have one add-on note. I do want to also recognize Commissioner Rosales in her participation in the Outdoors for All that you mentioned. We had three commissioners that were in attendance to that, as well as Commissioner Rosales, Commissioner Hawkins, and Commissioner Gonzalez were a panel on the Outdoors for All, and I think it was a first annual. It was a great event. It showcased a lot, lots of outdoor opportunity in all areas, and you know the importance of California really reaching and trying to get everyone, no matter what their financials, no matter where they come from, their background, that everyone does have the right to be able to recreate. So I appreciate your participation in that. Yes, 2 days ago.
Okay, thank you, Deputy Director Fernandez. We're gonna move on to public comments for this agenda item. And I will ask the clerk, do we have any green comment cards on the agenda item?
No, we do not have any green comment cards.
Anyone on the raised hands on the Zoom feature?
There is one hand raised.
Okay, I'd recognize the public comment.
Greg Rochelle, I will unmute you and allow you to talk. You'll have 3 minutes.
Hello, my name is Greg Braxwell. I'm with the Friends of Mission Creek in San Francisco, and it's a group that's interested in access to the waterways as well as water quality. And a couple of issues have been coming up, not only in San Francisco, but statewide regarding water quality for not only for swimmers, but also for small recreational boaters and human-powered craft especially. Stand-up paddle boarders and kayakers are frequently exposed to polluted water. And I think I wanted to bring up the point that understanding that pollution and understanding the human context of public health context, to our boating folks. I also want to really emphasize that although personally I have a trailer boat and a moored boat, I'm an old wood boat enthusiast, but also I'm very much enthusiast of water, of human-powered craft, including kayaks, stand-up paddle boards, and rowboats. And Friends of Mission Creek is especially focused on these human-powered craft. And everything that the Commission and the Boating and Waterways can do to encourage more small boat human-powered craft, it expands the base of the citizens of California that are benefiting from your efforts. What we're seeing over the last 25 years...
Yeah, Mr. Broswell, there you are. And I don't mean to interrupt. We have a minute left, and I'm going to let you go, but this is, I think, more appropriately addressed in general public comments for agendas, items not on the agenda. But why don't you finish up?
I'm sorry. I raised my hand because I thought you had entered the general public comment. That is correct. I had signed up for general public comment.
Why don't you finish up? We'll recognize you, and I appreciate what you're saying. And the commissioner's, the deputy director's report is rather broad, so we can kind of squeeze it in.
I'm sorry. I meant
not at all. Not at all. Go ahead.
The bottom line is that boating of waterways can increase the depth of the citizens of California that are affected by being more proactive and pushing more into the human-powered craft. Especially beach access and water quality. And these are things that I think I really want to encourage. Also, getting more information about Californians that are using small watercraft, human-powered watercraft, and learning what your population is and doing more outreach to them as a part of your programs will increase your agency's impact and hopefully financial picture. That's what I wanted to say. Thank you. I'm sorry I spoke in the wrong section.
We appreciate your passion for your issues, and I think your comments are well taken. So now, my fellow commissioners who are chomping at the bit to ask Deputy Director Fernandez, does any of my fellow commissioners have questions on the Deputy Director's report?
Excuse me, Chair.
Yes.
We do have one more
I'm sorry.
Public comment that is not on the agenda. Do you want to go back to Ramona's comments and questions first and then follow up with the public comment?
I want to have public comments on agendas, not items not on the agenda,
okay,
during that period on the agenda.
Okay? And that's where we are right now. So
we're on comments about the Deputy Director's report. Right?
Yeah, you skipped it, but that's okay. That's okay.
I don't think I skipped anything.
Okay.
Well, we have a... Anyways, I mean, I want to... Now, we're right under Deputy Director's report, item number 6, and then item number 7 is public comment period for items not on the agenda. So we're still under 6, and now my fellow commissioners get to have their questions for the Deputy Director. If I got that right? Yes. Because the chair is always right. Okay. Commissioner Medina, do you have any questions for comments on the Deputy Director's report?
Not at this time. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Hallahan.
Thank you so much for that report. So when you stated the 67,000 people coming onto the water, was that like, are you counting the monies that we spent through DBW for education and increased water access kind of thing, and that's a one-time exposure to getting on the, and it's actually on the water?
So that, this is on the water, on the education, on the aquatic centers. So this is on the aquatic centers that we fund.
So say a center gets 4,500 people on the water that year, even though it's like one day, that's what the number comes from, 67,000.
Yes.
And does that money, when you were saying about the U.S. Money that we get for education and also law enforcement, is that part of the pot of money we were talking about yesterday that runs DBW, or is that like a separate?
That's a separate pot. So I think yesterday always talked about was state funding,
mm-hmm,
the Harbors Watercraft Revolving Fund. We didn't, the budget
for that,
the budget presentation was strictly on state funding. This is federal funding. So this is in addition to.
So we separate that. Like,
yes.
The state funding doesn't pay for education, just the federal funds.
Correct.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't understand that. So has that changed because of the flux and flows of things?
It has. Our allocation this year, I just received our allocation for 2026. It's a proposed from the U.S. Coast Guard, and our funding has been slightly reduced, and it's partly, I believe, was our match. So we get so much as a formula that every state, and then there's a match that each state can do to exceed that formula. And so with our reduction in our services as a state funding, that we potentially are, that was why we got reduced.
So the money that we spend for California Boating Card education, like to get the word out, to get the card, is that a state funded?
That the campaign that you see all over, yeah, that is federal funds. That is state fund. That is the funds that we receive from the boater card program.
And that was not in the amount of money we saw yesterday. So the whole education budget wasn't in the amounts that we were talking about yesterday.
The education budget, so let me back up. So the education part for the Aquatic Center grants that we give out, mm-hmm, was not included, but education was included. So the support and the people that, you know, the Melissa group and all of those, and the other programs that we provide, the Life Jacket Loaner Station, the, you know, K through 12, Aqua Smart, and all the other education programs that we do, is state funding.
I see. Okay, that gives me a lot of clarity. Thank you so much. I want to commend everyone for the Outdoors for All. We'd love to see that more. Again, the drinking and boating, people call it, instead of DUI, BUI.
Yes.
And at our last meeting in November, we had different law enforcement talk about, and also last year in 2025, we also had a statement come in from a Delta officer about the BUIs not really getting prosecuted because of some loophole in the law. Are we working on that at all?
So what we have done in our training, we train, you know, statewide law enforcement on BUI. In part of that training, we started, it's been several years now maybe, we included a component. So we added a day, and what we have done is we've included district attorneys. So we've started to educate DA, the district attorney offices.
The state district attorney.
Yes, well, specific counties. So we haven't gotten to the state. But what we have we started there. So I think it's kind of been an eye-opener for several of the counties to really understand. So the BUI training program, Boating Under the Influence training program, is held in three different counties. Mm-hmm. And so we invite, well, they're part of that training now, and it was really an eye-opener for them to learn and understand, you know, the other side of that. So that has helped.
We just need to keep doing that. I've actually showed the video from last year to a few yachters and people, and I've had people just straight up say it's not true. Like, people get, you know, that people do get prosecuted for BUIs, and if I'm hearing it over and over and over for 2 years, it's something that really has to be dealt at the state level. Yeah. Thank you very much for your report.
Okay, Commissioner Medina.
Thank you, Chair. Director, is that the RBSG program then that's used for the training that Commissioner Hallahan was just referring to, that funding that's coming from the federal to fund the law enforcement training?
Yes.
And has there been in the allocated amount for law lead, has there been a reduction in that compared to previous years on that RBSG?
From the RBS grant?
Yeah.
It fluctuates depending on how much is given to the sport fish, you know, fund. And depending on each state's, as I mentioned, the match. So if people go over and beyond. But this, I would say this year, from the time I've been managing the program over the last 14 years or so, that it's the first time I've seen it this low for our allocation for California. So it's each state. So we used to be right up there with Florida. So it was Florida, California, and then Michigan. I think we've fallen now to maybe fourth highest, you know, as far as our allocation from the U.S. Coast Guard, the federal funds.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Rosales, do you have any questions on the Deputy Director's report?
No questions. Thank you.
And then, of course, Commissioner Id Sather. I think I got it right that time.
I have a question on the encouraging progress that you've made with respect to boater safety. Mm-hmm. It's very encouraging to see fatalities down 15% in 2025 relative to 2024, and total accidents as well down by 12%. It looks like alcohol is one factor, that there's been progress on that front. Do you also track life jacket usage, and specifically the life jacket loaner stations, the impact that those have?
We are working on trying to look at, you know, how the life jacket loaner stations impact of, you know, related to people. It's kind of hard. So we have, 100 plus life jacket loaner stations there. So I know the education team is trying to bridge getting statistics of, you know, most of them have to be managed, but correlating that to whether someone had a life jacket on or not on an accident. But we do have the statistics on whether whether someone was wearing their life jacket or not. So let's see, there was 30, so that's, is still the gap remains. There's about 77%. So 30 people of those that died were not wearing their life jacket. So compared to 23.9 that were alcohol impaired. So those two are, I mean, life jacket has, seems to still be the number one in issue or reason potentially of, you know, not wearing that life jacket.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Id Sather, for your questions. So I just had a couple, actually, on that very subject. Mm-hmm. I understand these are very impressive numbers, reduction of injuries and accidents down and so forth. Is there, I mean, we sort of had this big boating boom during the pandemic in terms of boating usage. So has boating usage overall declined post-pandemic, such that these reductions in injuries and deaths and so forth may be attributed to that? I mean, I don't know how you measure boating usage generally, but yeah. I'm just would, you know, like to get some insight on that.
Yeah, so we, I mean, obviously we all know the boom of, you know, pandemic time. I think they kind of have, after those last several years, have kind of leveled out. I think one of the things that we are looking at, the paddlecraft versus the, you know, motorized, you know, we know that there's a lot more people out on paddlecrafts than there have been in the past. So we're looking at that as well. As far as you're talking about boaters increase, I would probably say for motorized, there we see that there may have been a decrease.
Okay, so there, but we don't really keep, I mean, it's, as I said, it's very hard to measure usage, right? Mm-hmm. But so that might be sort of one of the attributes of those very impressive figures.
One of the other things there, though, just is that last year we also saw with the golden mussel, so there was a lot of reservoirs in lakes, or reservoirs and lakes that actually closed last year due to the, so we don't know if that's also contributed to less potential on the water because of unable to get, you know, on the water because of the golden mussel issue.
So okay, we're going to get more information on closing of reservoirs later today? Because I didn't know we were closing reservoirs because of golden mussels.
Oh, yes. Yes, you will.
Okay, great. I'll pose it to the next person in line. Then are we also going to get more information later on, because we kind of breezed over this, the marine debris removal grant in the Delta from NOAA. Is that going to be part of the SAVE presentation later today?
Yes, it will.
Okay, good. And then I guess my other question, – Oh, you mentioned in terms of AB 102 provision to try to get some more money into the revolving fund and placing in a structural balance with ongoing basis. And you said we're going to be sending notices out. So to whom and in what form? Because that seems very important to get public an understanding at the legislative level from the community. So that seems to me critically important to trying to get this revolving fund back in balance.
Yeah.
So what is the form of that?
So the form notices? We usually send, we'll send out through emails. We'll probably have it through our social media platforms as well. We do have lists of what we call our VIP, but various stakeholders, organizations that we will be sending out as well. So okay. We do have, I think, information from the prior individuals or organizations that gave us information on the last go-round of those engagements. So we'll be including an invite out.
And
again, as I mentioned earlier, when you all get an invite, and if you know of organizations or individuals that should be participating in this, that it's a public open work, forum. So you can pass the information.
Would that be in conjunction with the California Boating Congress that we can?
It won't be in
conjunction, but
it'll our timing will probably be around that. We'll probably be, there's this April. We'll be holding our first meeting or workshop before CBC, California Boating Congress. Yeah.
Not to give a pitch for private groups here at this meeting, but that seems to make sense. Okay, so anything further, commissioners, on this subject matter? Okay, if not, please, Commissioner Hallahan.
So if you go to the commissioner website, the California Boating and Waterway Commissioning website, you can scroll down to submit. And you can get California Park News and go to Boating and click that. And then you should be getting emails, and that would be one way that you'll send out the emails about the upcoming events. Is that correct?
Yes. And we also have our PIO in the audience here, so he will make sure that we're getting out the word, Kevin.
Okay, great. All right, nothing else heard. We'll move now on to agenda item, seven, and that would be public comment period for items not on the agenda. Do we have any cards?
We do, Chair. I have one, and I will bring this to you, and also Mr. Emmett will come up, and the pamphlets I've placed on your table, and I will put some in the back of the room. We'll reference his comments.
Okay, great. Thank you. So the chair will now recognize for comment on non-agenda items, Mr. Emmett Cartier, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Correct.
Welcome. I believe you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners and chair and staff. Have provided some information, about 15 pages, for reference in the area. We're sort of evolving, I think, in how Boating and Waterways Commission and Division works within state parks, and I understand that. And as some of the commissioners have said, it's very interrelated with a number of other issues and lands and recreation. So some of my comments address how that might work. I'm here partly because last week I had gotten word from state parks that my application for a concession permit for whitewater boating on the easy parts of the North and Middle Fork American River was declined because there could be natural resource concerns or historical resources concerns through the Auburn Dam site, which had been severely disturbed since authorized in 1965 and sort of torn up through the 70s until construction stopped about 50 years ago. But $100 million project made a whitewater park through there that is open to the public since 2008 when the American River Pump Station was built. So And there's been many other changes in the area. And the area is perfectly favorable for boating, more of a interpretive sort of trip, river touring rather than the white water that is done on the upper reaches of the North and Middle Fork, and even easier than the Class 3 on the popular South Fork. So anyway, that was a concern, and it just occurred to me that some of those plans were based on 1980s studies that were kind of pejorative in treating boating as hazards and conflicts and impacts and so on and so forth. And I'm still kind of wondering what the impacts to the natural or disturbed environments would be in that particular area. I haven't heard back from state parks. Did send a letter in, so hoping to hear back. But some of the concerns would be how we manage concessions at all. The existing 25 outfitters on the South Fork, 15 on the Middle Fork, 11 on the North Fork, are all under a 2019 form of contract held over on a month-to-month basis, and you wouldn't do marinas that way. So at any particular month, they could go out of business, and that's a concern for the outfitters I've talked to. So I just thought maybe we should bring that to your attention and offer the commission maybe an opportunity to go to Coloma or Auburn, look at some of these sites, maybe take a little boat trip and see what that looks like. Happy to help with that, okay? Appreciate you being in the American River watershed. You notice there's no motorboats out here. It's close to close to motorboats for 5 miles of Lake Natoma. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir, for your comments. And I believe they're well taken. We can't really address your comments at this section in the agenda. But so are there any other public comments?
No, Chair, there are no more comments.
Okay, so then we will move on. Excuse me?
Sorry, Chair, there is one more hand raised. Mr. Bill Clark, you are allowed to talk.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Bill Clark, and I'm a former tenant of SF Marina. Excessive birth rate increases between 2023 and 2025 of 53%, the highest in the Bay Area, forced myself and many others to seek more reasonable rates elsewhere. Along with the unreasonable increases, I have witnessed the hollowing out of SF Marina's financial viability due to bad design decisions from the 2010 West Harbor renovation, the deliberate negligence of standard marina maintenance, and the creation of an Art Wreck and Park narrative to distort actual tenancy demand and accurate occupancy figures. With little to no oversight, RPD has created its own fiefdom at SF Marina, which they operate with impunity to benefit the Greater Parks Department at the expense of a thriving boating community and responsible marina operations. The 2010 DBW loan mentions review by DBW engineers and project overseers, but how in-depth was the analysis and subsequent follow-up? The most problematic components of the West Harbor renovations are as follows. RPD chose 14 wide berths for a majority of their marina configuration to optimize berth inventory. 14 feet is considered narrow by industry standards and function properly if maintenance dredging is performed to preserve required harbor depth. RPD was supposed to use funds from the DBW loan to dredge Inner West Harbor to maintain the viability of their 14-foot wide berth inventory, but has chosen not to since the early 1990s. Currently, there are 77 vacant berths and counting that have resulted in annual loss revenue of $1.2 to $1.4 million. Is this in violation of the DBW loan? Two rows of berths next to the Golden Gate Yacht Club built for the renovation had to be removed due to faulty RPD studies that failed to predict the increase of sand silting entering the harbor. The result of this miscalculation caused a waste of DBW loan funds, a loss of annual income, and greater dredging expenditures. A sand pit near the harbor entrance, approved by VCDC for the 2010 renovation to control incoming sand migration and subsequent dredging costs, was quietly cut from the project. In conclusion, what happened to the years of robust pre-COVID revenue? It is clear SF Marina did not benefit from surplus income with any semblance of standard marina upkeep. Instead, the combination of recent berth rate increase overkill, the lack of inner harbor dredging, and challenging narrow berths has caused an exodus that threatens the financial stability of SF Marina. Proper oversight and accountability are vital at this time to rein in an errant Wreckham Park. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Clark, for your comments. Do we have any other hands raised on Zoom?
No, Chair, we do not.
Okay, so in that event, we will move on to agenda item number 8, division program reports. And I believe we're going to be first hearing from Ms. Disney on surrender and abandoned vessel exchange grants.
Chair Pierre and Commissioners, I am Gina Disney, and I run the Surrendered and Abandoned Vessel Exchange Program, which we call SAVE. Closer. That's so loud. So I'm going to give an update on the SAVE program today. Next slide. The purpose of the SAVE grant is to remove, reduce, and prevent abandoned recreational vessels from entering California waterways by providing funding to local agencies that remove abandoned and derelict vessels. In 2010, as a preventative approach, the program was expanded to assist Californians who wish to surrender boats that have reached the end of their useful lives. Historically, this SAVE program allocation has been $2.75 million. But as a result of ongoing efforts to preserve the solvency of the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund, the budget for SAVE 25 and potentially future years was reduced to $1 million from the State Parks Revolving Fund. Next slide. Since the inception of the program in 1999, nearly $26 million have been spent to remove over 7,000 unwanted and abandoned vessels. These are the average disposal costs for the abandoned and surrender vessels over the life of the program. Next slide. And here are some updates from the most recent grant cycles. For the 2023 cycle, DBW awarded $2.75 million to 29 agencies, and 438 vessels have been removed with that funding. For the 24 cycle, $2.75 million was awarded to 27 agencies. And these grant agreements are now in their final year of availability, and agencies are currently removing and destroying vessels. To date, 100 vessels have been destroyed. These agencies are still in the process of submitting their final reimbursement requests, so the totals will change once all of the reimbursement claims are processed. Next slide. Listed are the awarded agencies for the 25-26 cycle, and this information can also be found on our website. 35 agencies applied, requesting a total of $4.8 million, and 26 agencies were awarded $1,040,000, and that $40,000 was transferred from SAVE 24 funding. Next slide, please. And this slide just shows the percentages of total funding that was awarded by region across California. These are the SAVE regions. Next slide. Since 2024, DBW has been improving the SAVE program through enhanced data collection, application updates, and outreach to encourage participation in the Funds Assist program. prior to 2022, approximately 20% of saved funds went unspent for every cycle. As we reach the end of the 22 cycle, we are very proactive in encouraging grantees to participate in our Funds Assist program. When that cycle closed, just 13% of the funds remained unspent. And the 2023 cycle, which is ended in September, is currently on track to have 5% remaining. So, and this year we will continue to work to ensure all saved funds are spent. The grant agreement now stipulates that we may amend grant agreements and redistribute funds if they aren't being used effectively. Next slide. In response to increasing demand and reduced resources, we have implemented several program improvements this year. In November, we hosted the first annual grantee meeting. We shared information and updates on the program, got feedback from grantees, and had high-performing agencies present on their strategies and best practices. During that meeting, the grantees shared the need for a way to communicate directly with one another, and so we created a SharePoint forum for the SAVE grantees. And each year, we continue making application updates and improvements to benefit both applicants and scorers. And last September, DBW was awarded a $2.6 million grant from NOAA. For a Sacramento San Joaquin Delta cleanup project. And that again is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Next slide, please. That annual grantee meeting allowed us to communicate directly with over 60 attendees. And the following were some of the cost-saving strategies that we shared at the meeting. Work with local landfills to receive surrendered vessels. By encouraging those surrendering vessels to remove all hazardous waste and transport their vessel to landfill directly, we could save money by reducing towing costs and hazmat removal fees. To coordinate vessel storage, destruction, and disposal, some contractors offer reduced cost for demo of more than one vessel at a time. Accepting surrendered vessels to prevent abandonment at future higher costs. So we're encouraging people to focus energy and funds for surrendered vessels on those that are most likely to be abandoned. To participate in regional coordination meetings, at the grantee meeting, several agencies shared time and money-saving strategies with the group. And ultimately, we want to see these agencies working together on larger demo projects. And work with local marinas to promote early surrender. Once a vessel sinks, the cost to remove it increases dramatically. And so marinas are encouraged to surrender those vessels that are abandoned in their slips before they become derelict. Next slide, please. For the Marine Debris Removal Grant, we were awarded $2.6 million that will be subawarded to four sheriff departments and a district attorney who work throughout the Delta removing and preventing large debris. In addition to recreational vessel removal, funds will be used for vehicles, barges, and dilapidated docks. And funds may be used for all large marine debris except commercial vessels. And in addition to funding debris removal, funds will be used to install surveillance cameras at popular dumping sites and signage outlining consequences of illegal dumping and how to report it when it's witnessed. Next slide, please. Now I'll just wrap up with some upcoming activities for the 26th cycle. The 26th application will be open March 16 through April 30 for the 26-27 funding year. DBW will be conducting a virtual grant application workshop on March 24th. The workshop will cover how to apply for a grant, scoring criteria, application process, grant award procedures, and other requirements of the grant program. Notification of the workshop and grant application will be sent out in a press release, emailed to potential applicants, and posted on the DBW website. Our applications are always scored by a team of independent reviewers to ensure the integrity of the review process. The application prioritizes funding according to agencies with the most need, cost-efficient methods, effective prevention strategies, and coordination with private marina owners in the prevention of derelict vessels. And SAVE program staff participate in regional coordination meetings addressing abandoned vessel issues, including the Bay Area Marina operators and the abandoned derelict vessel work group in Northern California. Additionally, they attend the newly established regional abandoned vessel coordination meetings hosted by the Newport Beach Harbor Department in Southern California. Next slide, please. And that is the end of my update. Here's my contact information, and now you can, anybody has any questions?
So we moved to public comments on this. Do we have, I don't have any blue cards, so do we have any hands raised on Zoom?
No, we do not, Chair.
Okay. So then I'll turn to my fellow commissioners. Anyone have comments on the presentation? Yes? Commissioner Hallahan.
Thank you so much. That was a great presentation. It's pretty detailed. I mean, you have to get really into the weeds of this education. How do you actually functionally move the boats around? You know, Army Corps of Engineers, these are derelict boats. They have to be moved sometimes with multiple agencies involved because they have crafts. And then do those people get reimbursed? It's very actually complicated and also... Yeah, and then there's what they were saying about people just ditching boats at people's harbors and things like that. So that really irritates people who own harbors or run harbors because it's their main thing they have to spend their energy on is moving that boat off. So there's good actors in the boating world that have boats and bad actors. And how do you keep those going, you know? So thank you for that work. We definitely want to keep the good actors involved. And so I did have a question. I did see where you said that you were suggesting video cameras in places where people do illegal dumping. Like, how is that monitored? And is that like a police type thing? And could you share a little more about that?
Yeah, so it's through the Sacramento Sheriff and the DA, and they're going to be working together. And I believe the sheriff will be monitoring, right?
The district attorney.
Oh, the DA is, okay, the DA is going to be monitoring the cameras.
California DA or Sacramento DA?
Sac County.
So in San Francisco, they don't do anything with video, you know, because it's not... They can't prosecute, and they kind of have all these laws around it. But people could at least get warnings, or they could see if it's coming from a boat, what it is. So they have it in specific areas. They know that's dumping. There's dumping going on. Yeah. These are boaters or just anyone dumping in the river?
Just anybody
dumping. Dumping.
Like illegal people, dumping in the river.
Like using it as a dump yard.
Yeah.
Wow.
Go ahead. In terms of the criteria for what the grant monies can be used for, like the thresholds, right? Like you're talking video and the sustainability of that, and who designates what the grant can pay for? And like I understand on the debris removal or vessel abandoned vessel removal, but like when you start using it for technologies, how do we decide that's an appropriate use?
That was something that the Sacramento Sheriff and DA wrote into their proposal for the NOAA grant. And so we included it in our application when we submitted. We don't use state funds from SAVE for signage or cameras or any of that. That's only with the NOAA funding. And that was approved through DBW and NOAA. And it's a very small portion of the grant. I can get the specific numbers to you later if you want me to email them to you.
No, I think I'm fine with that.
Any other commissioner questions, comments? I'm sorry. You passed the
microphone. Oh, my goodness. I just let a little. Okay, fine.
Go ahead. No, if you have further comments, Commissioner Hallahan, please.
I'll let my other commissioners slide in any time they want to. So do you know what? So you're going ahead with the NOAA grants like you always have, asking for the same amount of money or packaging it with different groups. Like, so you're going ahead thinking that it's going to continue the same or not? Like, I'm just wondering, when you pass these applications to NOAA, do you get some rejections at the NOAA, or do they just bundle it together and give you the $2.7 million?
So I understand this is the first time that DBW has applied for this specific marine debris removal grant. And so, yeah, we just reached out to agencies in the Delta, and because we knew that we needed more funding. And
Yes. Sorry, Gina. Thank you. So, yes, it was. This is our first time that we applied for this funding. So, and we were successful. So, as Karen mentioned yesterday, it's very specific. It's project specific geographically. So, as we work through this one, and our goal would be, to take advantage of any funding that we have, the opportunity to get approved for. So our goal would be potentially in the future to do other projects, but I think we're still in the early phases of even implementing this grant. So more to come on future meetings when we can update you on how the progress is going on that NOAA grant.
So I just want to say this is awesome that you're exploring this area. And I just, when I go to these meetings and there's private and public harbor owners, managers, we've got to make sure that the private groups get the help too, not just the public marinas, I think. That's personally, because they're getting the same kind of harassment by the bad actors that and dropping boats and all that kind of stuff as, the public marinas. So we just have to make sure we're fair, because they certainly complain a lot about it when I'm at these other meetings with the harbor owners. So I just appreciate that. And great work. Thank you.
There's just not a lot of work that we can do with our funding with private marinas. It's all through local agencies.
Any other comments from commissioners?
Well, I wanted to say, first of all, thank you for a great presentation and congratulations on the NOAA grant. As somebody who has been involved in investing in the Delta and engaging with the boating communities there, I have learned that the Delta is vast. And I think the fact that you have four counties involved here and the sheriffs from all of those counties involved speaks to that. So I was curious to understand if there are any particular parts of the Delta that you will be prioritizing, or any way that you try to manage the size of this area that this grant applies to.
It's really just based on the debris that was identified by the agencies in their applications. So, where those kind of popular dumping sites are. And so the money is not spread evenly across the four agencies. I don't have the specific numbers in front of me, but everything, the way that the money is allocated is based on the applications that were submitted by the agencies.
So I think you kind of addressed this, but I'm really want just to get a little more context on outreach and what you're doing, because, as your numbers indicate, it costs 30 or 40% more to remove or abandon rather than a surrendered vessel. And so it seems to me like there's a good objective would be to try to front load these things. So could you just describe for us what, in terms of outreach, do you outreach to boaters? Because I would imagine most boaters have no idea that this program exists. Do you just outreach to agencies? Do you just outreach to, I understand you outreach to marinas, and as Commissioner Hallahan said, it's a major concern for them. So maybe you can just walk us through what that sort of public education process is. I will note that it's sort of the red flag is when someone sells a boat for a dollar, right? That's going to become an abandoned vessel, and someone's going to live aboard it for 2 or 3 years, and then they're going to walk away. And then, I don't know if you're coordinating with DMV in terms of boats that sell for a dollar, But anyways, those are the last is my thought, and then I had my question that I sort of front-loaded there. So if you could please describe your outreach program.
We encourage our agencies to do outreach with the local marinas in their areas. With the clean and green boating, I know that Vivian does some outreach and includes some information about SAVE and some of those dock walks. But as far as like a DBW-run outreach program, it's not something that we do. We just... it's really up to the agencies to do the work. And so when we have these grantee meetings, as I'm talking with them, especially as the funding is getting reduced, and the reason that abandoned vessels are so much more expensive is because so often they're sunk or they're in weird spots. And so there's already environmental damage. There's hazmat leaking. And so if we can, we want to really encourage the marina owners, because we get a lot of marina owners that are surrendering vessels that have been in their slips for 5-10 years that have already been sunk and that kind of stuff. And so we're really trying to get them to promote the abandoned vessel program with the local marinas before the cost gets higher, especially with the reduced.
So it's kind of a trickle-down model. You just work with the agencies and say, go out and find these vessels and it's kind of up to them. Okay. Yeah, that was my question. Okay.
And I do, you know, I get a lot of people reaching out to me directly from the website. People, a person recently, this guy gave me a boat, and I was so excited. And now I need $20,000 to get rid of it. And so I reach out to people when they email or call me, and I do work with them and try to find resources throughout the agencies.
Okay. I just got one more for you. And so the NOAA grant was... fiscal year specific. It was just a single one-off grant. Okay, and what is this, why is, does NOAA offer other grants outside of the Delta? Because we're all kind of Delta-centric here because we're in Sacramento and everything like that. Or
yeah.
Are there other NOAA grants for other areas?
Yeah, all over the, I mean, all over the country. So we chose the Delta because it is, it's, we know that there's a big demand for debris removal. We know that we have limited resources, and it's this one, the marine debris program is area specific. And so
I guess what I'm at, I don't really care about
I'm not,
grants all around the country. I'm more concerned about, do they offer grants outside of the Delta in California?
Yes, you define the area when you apply for the grant.
Okay, and are we doing that?
Not currently, no. We just got, this is the first time that we've applied for this. We'll be up again, theoretically it'll be up again in October to apply.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll just say the estuary in San Francisco is clogged with abandoned vessels and
riverboards
and everything like that. So I don't know if that's included in the NOAA grant area for the Delta, but.
So I was just going to add on, and Karen, you can add on to mine, but I believe that other agencies, not just us at the state level, can apply for these grants. So I think that San Diego has a grant that they were successful in. I don't know if it's a county or city, but there's other local entities that also can apply for this funding. It's not just us. So that I think San Diego has applied. I don't know if there's any others.
Oakland has applied.
Oakland has applied.
Yeah, and they received the funding.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And so they're still working on that. And we are in the environmental compliance phase right now to see what all the requirements are going to be to do the vessel removal with the NOAA funding.
Yeah.
Oakland was awarded in 23.
Yes.
And they're just wrapping up their review process. So that is one thing that makes doing this kind of work in the Bay very difficult, is because there are so many endangered species overlapping Well, jurisdiction and it's like, what is the, like, wildlife sanctuaries? Like, oh, gosh, I'm sorry. Refuges. Yeah, so there are many protected areas that overlap, that, and there are so many different organizations involved, and so it can be difficult to do removal throughout the Bay because there are so many.
Yeah, thank you.
Sorry.
Please, Commissioner Hallahan.
Do you prioritize boats that are in waterways than are sunken? That's first question, no?
No, it's really just navigational hazards. If it's a navigational hazard, that is the biggest thing. And then however the agencies in the area prioritize the removal efforts.
So navigational hazards, if they're sunken or not, are priority, and then you go towards the harbors. I would like to say after, you know, spending a lot of time in the Delta over the years, that dredging has become harder and harder and more expensive. So whole small marinas get trapped and people can't take their boats out. Then they neglect them and they stop paying. So what you're finding with all these interagencies working together, it's the same thing for a small marina owner with like 100 slips. So they just can't do the mouth of the harbor anymore. And this high tide is only that high. The boats start going out. So whatever, you know, we can do as a community to understand that process has gotten so difficult to just dredge so small amount. We went to the Sacramento Marina and talked with the public marina there, and a massive amount of their part of their income goes towards keeping that mouth open and the permits that they have to pay to keep that mouth open, and that's just a small public marina. So anyway, I really appreciate your work. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your presentation. I know it's a, what's the word, Sisyphean task,
yes.
Right? So for those of you who are operating your Greek mythology. Okay. All right, thanks again for that. All right, so now we're going to move on to boating and safety equipment grants, and I believe we're going to be hearing from Joanna Naughton.
Okay, so I am the program administrator for the Boating Safety and Enforcement Equipment Grant Program. We're within the Grants and Loans Unit. And today I'll provide you an update with the Boating Safety and Enforcement Equipment Grant Program. It's also called BSEE, just so you know. The purpose of this program is to provide grants to local government agencies for the purchase of boating safety and law enforcement equipment to perform boating safety and law enforcement services. Next slide, please. This program is funded by the Recreational Boating Safety, also known as the RBS Federal Grant Fund, issued by the U.S. Coast Guard. The budget varies on the allocation that we receive from the RBS funds. Last year's requested total was $4.1 million, and we were only able to award approximately $1.2 million. So as you can see, it's a really, really competitive grant. The BSEE grant application opens every spring, and our online grant application system, it's called OLGA. Only local government agencies who can demonstrate a need for boating safety and law enforcement equipment are eligible for BSEE grant funding. And applications that meet the minimum qualifications are then scored by a team of independent reviewers, and the highest scoring requests are offered an award. Application questions attempt to determine the applicant's need for the equipment, the cost effectiveness of equipment requested, the amount of time that the equipment will be used for recreational boating safety, and the extent of the applicant's Marine Patrol Boating Safety Unit activity. Examples of equipment that can be purchased include patrol boats, PWCs with trailers, electronics, motors, and repowers or engine replacements. Because the purpose of this grant is for recreational boating safety, the U.S. Coast Guard has determined that equipment used only for recovery is not eligible. So items used for recovery activities such as dive gear must be prorated according to the projection of eligible versus ineligible use. Okay, next slide. Okay, the BSE grant applications are scored and ranked to the RBS grant and Coast Guard priorities. Okay, BSE grant funding priorities are ranked in this order: promoting recreational boating safety, enforcement of recreational boating safety laws, search and rescue activities for recreational boaters, and recovery of evidence for recreational boating accidents, injuries, and fatalities. Next slide, please. Okay. So for fiscal year 25-26, we awarded 20 grants for approximately $1.2 million. Items awarded are 3 patrol boats, 4 pairs of PWCs, 10 repowers and vessel repairs, some sonar and radar equipment, some search and rescue equipment, and miscellaneous patrol boat equipment. This slide lists the agencies and funding that they received in the most recent grant cycle. The complete list of the items awarded to each agency is also posted on our BSE grant program webpage, if you want to look at that. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, so here are a few current program updates. The fiscal year 26-27 grant application will open up March 16th through April 30th, 2026. DBW will conduct a virtual applicant workshop on March 24th, which will cover how to apply for grants, scoring criteria, tips for the application process, reimbursement requests, annual reports, and other requirements of the grant program. Notification of the workshop and grant application will be sent out via our press release, emailed to potential applicants, and is currently posted on our website. Due to the competitive nature of this grant, the maximum award to any single one agency is 10% of the annual program budget, which is typically about $140,000. Okay, next slide. Okay, so our new annual report template for BSCE grant program that was developed and rolled out in 2022, so it was a few years ago, is now fully implemented. All BSCE grants must submit an annual report in OLGA by August 31st each year of their grant term. Annual reports collect statistical data such as the number of citations and arrests made, number of search and rescues conducted, the number of boating accidents that they responded to, and the total number of boating safety patrol hours completed. And here are some of the data that was collected from last year's BSCE grantees that was not collected from our other grant programs like our subvention and financial aid programs. We had about 55,533 compliance inspection checks, over 600 search and rescue missions, over 20,000 boating safety assists, and 1,825 vessel assists. These statistics highlight some of the important boating safety education work that our BSE grantees are doing with grant-funded equipment. Next slide, please. Okay, so here's my contact information if you have any questions about the program. I will now conclude my presentation to open up for any questions.
Okay, Madam Clerk, do we have any public comments on the matter? Any hands raised?
No, sir, we do not.
Very well. So then I'll turn to my fellow commissioners for their comments or questions. Anyone?
Thank you, Johanna, for your presentation. That was very informative. This kind of ties into our workshop yesterday. With respect to the criteria, I know that you guys are looking at the priorities set out by the Coast Guard in terms of what the grant should focus on, but in terms of the actual priority, the criteria for the grantee as they're applying that language specifically, would that reside in the Harpers and Nav Code, or is that criteria for the grantee?
It's not in the Harpers and Navigation Code, but it is a priority of the Coast Guard, and that's where this funding is coming from.
Right. So in terms of the actual specifications for qualifying grantees that can apply. How is that determined?
Well, we basically make sure they do have law enforcement and they have a boat patrol. And that is in the navigation code, just so you know.
That is specifically mm-hmm. in the yep. Harbors and Nav code.
Correct? Yeah, that yeah. they have to be have a boating safety program.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then any changes to that, as discussed yesterday, would need to go through a change packet and a legislative change.
Yeah. And I think we've kind of been working on wanting to tweak that, but it's, yeah, we're hoping to do that in the coming years, hopefully.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Hallahan.
I've actually looked into this as well for the last year or so because it says a boating safety program, and then everyone starts talking that they have to be able to write a ticket. So does it say in the NAV code that they have to be able to write a ticket that then is prosecutable?
I don't think it's that specific in there. We do say in our grant agreement, though, if a fire department does want to apply, if they have an MOU with a law enforcement agency, they can apply.
So my question is specifically, it says boating safety program. I mean, our Sea Scouts have a boating safety program. I'm just saying, like, why wouldn't fire departments that do so much safety awareness be able to apply for this?
I'm not sure, but, you know, basically they have to have enforcement program.
Verbally I've been told they have to be able to write a ticket. But
that's not, I don't think, how it's worded in the regs. I would have to look at
it. No, that's what I've been said verbally. So
yeah,
I'm trying to,
no,
like,
I don't think it says anything about having to write. It just says that they have to have an enforcement program. If I don't have the California Boating Law book in front of me right now, so I can't say for sure.
Yeah, maybe we could follow up another time.
Yeah.
I'm Deborah Holmes, manager in the Division of Boating Waterways Grants and Loans Program. So the minimum requirements for this particular grant program are having citation authority. We need the people that are receiving the patrol boats to be able to issue tickets if they find somebody out on the water being reckless, being drunk. That's the safety component of this program.
And that minimum requirement, who sets that minimum requirement?
I believe... Do we know the regs say that? I believe our regulations in Title 14 for this program set that.
Regulations.
It is in the
regulations. It's not the statute. It's the regulations.
Okay. And so we had a discussion yesterday on regulations and their evolution and metamorphosis, right? Like how they change. And, mm-hmm. Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying about safety because... In our area, the fire department does so much safety education. It's incredible, and it would be nice to be able to recognize them as well with funds.
So, as Johanna said, we put in a provision a few years ago when we found out so many fire departments are doing the boating patrol, that if they cannot issue tickets, then they have an MOU with their local law enforcement that they would call them if a ticket needed to be written, and they would come out and respond. And then that would make them eligible to apply for this grant.
So it would just be a one-page MOU signed by the top people at the departments.
You are correct. We have several fire departments who receive this funding with one of those MOUs.
Okay, well, that's great for clarity. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And great work. It's so important. And I think, you know, your work has really contributed to the numbers dropping.
Karen, though, just to clarify on that, it is when a law enforcement agency, like a sheriff's department or a city, they choose not to have a Marine Patrol unit, and they defer those Marine Patrol activities to the fire department. So when we accept an MOU, we don't want to take away the law enforcement's ability to receive these funds, but if they're choosing not to use them and deferring those activities to a fire department, then we will accept the fire department's request for funding for that equipment because they're doing the work on behalf of the law enforcement agency.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
The reason that I'm bringing this up is that even when cities like San Francisco has both a marine unit and a fire department unit, a lot of times the fire department unit is like a response, quicker response, you know, for a lot of different things, like even a BUI or something like that. So they need to be able to get there, and they do safety. So in my perspective, it'd be nice to also include firefighters even when I understand putting out a fire is different than dealing with a BUI, but it just, it seems like it'd be nice to be able to include them. It'd be nice to have more money. I mean, like $10 million.
Right.
And be able to include more people. So anyway, thank you.
I think you're right. I think that, I mean, we have limited funds we're working with here, right? But I think this is potentially an opportunity for us as we look to the future on and revisit the criteria. Because I think operationally, yes, I mean, it makes sense having an MOU or doing the not taking duties and responsibilities away from one group, but how it plays out on the maritime environment is very different, and it's very fluid, and I can speak to that just from years of doing it. Mm-hmm. So it's not about taking anything away, but I think what more importantly, this is potentially an opportunity to look at those regulations and just kind of get better acquainted with them and how they might evolve to what current industry standards are and what's actually happening out there on the water.
Mm-hmm. So, exactly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything further? You're looking rather ponderous, no?
No, in the interest of time, I'd suggest we
okay.
Proceed.
I'm going to, and I appreciate that. I just do have some specific questions on your the agencies who are awarded grants, and in particular, to my view, Port San Luis Harbor District got $132,000. I've been there. I've spent a lot of time there. That's not a whole heck of a lot of where did the money go? That's what I'm trying to drive at.
I believe I can't remember for sure, but I'm pretty sure they are buying a really big boat because they have to have large boats on the ocean, you know, and they're funding over half of it themselves, so we're just helping them out with
okay,
that.
Okay, they just want a big boat because yeah, they don't even have a
they
marina
patrol
there. You know, it's not a lot of real estate, but and you've got, you know, right around the corner, Morro Bay, who probably handles, you know, they've got a Coast Guard station there, and they're getting 32,000.
No, they've gotten funded though. They have gotten funded.
I see that. Yeah, they got 32,000. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it seems like all those offshore big boat stuff is left to the Coast Guard and not to Port San Luis Harbor District. But it sounds like they need a big boat and they went through the application process. That's what I'm hearing. Is that correct?
Well, like I said, I believe they fair? We just funded a portion of it, and we are the lien holders for that boat.
Okay. Yeah, Karen?
Port San Luis has a wide reach. They, the Coast Guard, when the Coast Guard is deployed to a different area, Port San Luis hits everything else. I think they patrol, was it 50 or 100 miles of coastline, and they're the primary responder. Whereas Coast Guard, a lot of Coast Guard's efforts have gone recently towards border patrol efforts rather than boating safety, recreational boating safety response. So Port San Luis Harbor District, while, yeah, it's a small port, they're the primary responder for the significant portion of that coastline.
It's the stretch down to Point Conception,
which is
just a sandbar.
Now, I worked in the accident unit, and I know that, they used to put in accidents more than the Coast Guard, yep.
Then I'm asking just... Anyways, I know we're trying to move on here. Ventura Port District is $110,000.
I'm sorry, which one?
Ventura Port District. And again, that's a pretty relatively small marina. And, you know, I understand it's Channel Islands and everything like that.
I think this was an engine repower that they wanted to do. If I recall, I can't remember for sure. I'd have to look at the...
Yeah.
But I think it's... And we are really big fans of repower to extend the life of a boat.
Yeah. I mean, we're living in this age of limited resources.
Yeah,
so that's
exactly.
Why
and that's why repowers were really
asking the tough questions. Yeah. And, you know, then is Avalon Harbor District, that's $55,000, and they're just Avalon Harbor District. Or what did they, you know? I'm all for public safety, but just handing out money to people.
So Avalon, as you know, they have a tremendous so those $55,000 funded two personal watercraft for their local harbor department, who patrols the harbor, who patrols outside of the harbor. They are the first responders when someone has an issue. They send those PWCs out to make sure that if there are any BUIs, they're addressed. The Avalon Harbor, they are, you're a boater, you know how busy they are.
Yes.
And so these PWCs help them to be nimble in that, in their environment, and address the issues the boaters have there.
Okay. And then just briefly, that's not in Orange County. Is Avalon? I don't even know what the...
It's in L.A. County.
Yeah. No, I understand it's in Catalina, but I would consider that to be part of Orange or Los
Angeles
County. No,
it's Los Angeles County.
It's Los Angeles County. Yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah.
So why doesn't... Anyways.
And just to follow up on a different point on the complexity of it, Avalon Harbor, I mean, that technically is L.A. Sheriff's, and then you have a 365, seven-day-a-week presence there from with paramedics from L.A. County, lifeguards. And so there's a lot of multiple agencies that are at play, and that's, I think, what actually happens out in the water is very different than what we're saying here. So that's all we're trying to say, and I think that just speaks to the point and the complexity of it out there.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's... In the interest of time, we'll move on. But it just strikes me.
But we ask a lot of questions.
Frankly, it sounds like double dipping to me, right? Yeah. You know, and if, I don't know if you coordinate these grants between, but L.A., you know, I thought it was Orange, but it's L.A., right? And
yeah.
They've got a big presence there in their sheriff boats and everything, and that's kind of where I was going with Point St. Louis and Morro Bay and Orange and the Coast Guard and so forth. It's, you know...
We do ask questions on our grant application. We ask them how many accidents that they reported to us, and we'll talk to our accident unit and verify that. And we ask them how many citations and arrests that they've had, and so
okay, that's good.
See how active they are.
Please.
So I just would like to say, when I was down in Avalon a couple years ago, they had just lost two other Marine officers trying to get people off of boats because there was a Santa Ana wind blowing in, and they were trying to get people to get off their boats, and they weren't. And they lost two, you know, of their members. And I just want to say all of these incredibly heroic people, men and women, are out there keeping our waters safe, and this is a big state. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of naive people out there who don't know the rules of the road, and I just want to commend them, and I wish that we did have $10 million to break out, and that helps protect their lives. So thank you so much for your work.
I just want to make a point of clarification. Commissioner Peer, you mentioned double dipping. We are very careful that we don't have multiple agencies who are addressing the same area of responsibility, getting these funds to double dip with the BSEE funds. So LA County Sheriff, they primarily ask for funding for dive gear. We have not funded them a vessel, and they have such a wide area that when in their application, they tell us where that boat's going to be used so that there's no overlay from a different agency.
Okay, good. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. All right, thank you guys. Thank you very much for the presentations, because it was very informative for everyone, including the commission. Okay, so let's move on to the next item, which is agenda item 8 sub C, which is quagga and zebra mussel prevention grant program. And my notes here just say Jeff/Eddie, so if you could introduce yourself. Selbs.
Good morning, Chair Peer and members of the Commission. My name is Michael Rodriguez. I'm the environmental scientist with the Quagga and Zebra Mussel Infestation Prevention Grant Program, or QZ Grant Program for short.
And my name is Timothy Giles. I am a park and recreation specialist with the QZ Grant Program. Our program awards funding to the California Reservoir owners and managers for the purpose of developing prevention plans and implementing activities for infestation prevention through a competitive grant program. For this presentation, we're going to refer to our grant program as the QZ Grant Program. Acronyms you may see or hear us use is QZ, which is quagga and zebra, MFS, which is muscle fee sticker, CDFW, which is for California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and of course DBW for Division of Boating and Waterways. Next slide, please. Here's a quick overview of our team. We have Edward Hard, our unit chief, Michael Rodriguez, an environmental scientist, Brandy Vang, our environmental services intern, Timothy Giles, Park and Rec specialist. Next slide, please. Today we'll be giving a brief overview of how the program is funded, including information on the muscle fee sticker, benefits and updates on the program, including information on the new 2026 grant cycle, grant information, including information on eligibility, the differences between our Tier 1 and Tier 2 grant projects, risk factors considered for introduction and establishment of quagga and zebra mussels, updates including the golden mussel and AB149, and finally, our contact and resources information. Next slide, please. At least 85% of the muscle fee sticker provides the funding for this program at uninfested reservoirs, while up to 15% of these fees go to funding CDFW's quagga zebra mussel prevention efforts. Next slide, please. The quagga and zebra mussel fee sticker outreach education enforcement continues to inform boaters that the sticker purchase is still required. In 2021, DBW worked with DMV to implement a U.S. Coast Guard mandate to separate the sale of the muscle fee sticker from vessel registration. With that, we saw a drop in the muscle fee sticker sales and have been doing outreach and education ever since. The regulations separating the purchase of the muscle fee sticker from DMV vessel registration became effective in 2021. As a reminder, the muscle fee sticker is a separate transaction from vessel registration. Next slide, please. The funding from our prevention grant program not only helps reservoirs stay mussel-free, it also keeps the cost of implementing prevention projects from being passed on to the boater at the reservoirs, such as offsetting costs for boat inspections. It maintains tourism, ensures infrastructure such as water intakes at dams are not encrusted, and ensures ecosystems maintain a healthy balance. Next slide, please. So who's eligible for the QZ grant? To be eligible for the QZ grant, the reservoir needs to be mussel-free. The reservoir also needs to be open to the public. And the applicant needs to be the owner or manager of any aspect of water in the reservoir. Only when all three of these requirements are met can an applicant be considered eligible for the QZ grant. Next slide, please. The QZ grant program funds Tier 1 and Tier 2 projects. Tier 1 projects are for development of and improvement of the prevention plan with a maximum funding amount of $200,000. The requirement for prevention plans comes from our sister agency, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Tier 2 projects are for implementation projects with a maximum funding amount of $400,000. Next slide, please. Examples of Tier 2 projects include inspectors, ramp monitors, both human and canine, for inspections and decontaminations, mobile and stationary decontamination equipment. An example of mobile decontamination equipment can be seen on the left side here in the lower left. That's a mobile decon unit. Early detection muscle monitoring and water chemistry monitoring, both the personnel, time, and equipment. Decontamination or hydropads that collect the runoff from spraying the boats during decontamination, post board and signage for outreach. Next slide, please. Here we have a map provided by CDFW showing the locations of water bodies infested by QZ mussels. If we take a closer look, we can see there are currently no infestations north of San Benito County. This map is available for viewing in your program summary packet. It's also available on our web link, which is listed at the end of this presentation. A few risk factors to consider at reservoirs are water chemistry of the reservoir, if the reservoir is open to the public, number of boaters and events throughout the year, and number of launch ramps and access points around the reservoirs.
Next slide, please. I'm going to go over last year's grant cycle. Last year's grant cycle began August 18th, 2025. We received 17 applications from 11 applicants, and six projects were funded with a total amount awarded of approximately $2 million. The image to the right is a map showing all the reservoirs funded for the 2025 grant cycle. This map is available for viewing in your program summary packet. It's also available on our web link, which is listed at the end of the presentation. Next slide, please. Our program, which began with emergency regulations in 2013, has been rolling out funding each year to uninfested reservoirs since the 2014 cycle. The date on this slide depicts the QZ grant program metrics since the first grants rolled out in the 2014/15 and includes our latest 2025 awards in August of last year. The image to the right is a map showing all the unique reservoirs funded up through the 2025 grant cycle. The 2025 cycle was a very competitive year with 2.9 million requested more than was available. Since the program's inception, approximately 28.8 million has been awarded over the past 11 years. And we can see that the program has been effective because since inception, there has only been one grant-funded location that had a quagga mussel detection, and that was in 2016. A new QZ grant cycle has been offered each year, and each grant is a two-year grant. Next slide, please. Our next grant cycle for 2026 is expected to open in spring, pending available funding. Interagency review is done by DBW and our sister agency, CDFW. The grant is a two-year term expected to run from October 2026 through October 2028. The last 2 years, we've offered $2 million, which is down from the historical $3 million we used to offer. We've seen this drop in funding due to a decrease in sales of the mussel feast sticker since the decoupling in 2021. Next slide, please. Next, I'll talk about golden mussels. Golden mussels have been discovered in the Sacramento San Joaquin Delta. Native to China, they likely arrived in ballast water of international vessels. This is the first time this species of mussels has been encountered within the United States. Golden mussels are a non-native invasive species, like quagga and zebra mussels. They also pose the same threat as quagga and zebra mussels, since they too can damage native ecosystems, damage infrastructure, and limit recreation opportunities. This new threat is a bit more dire with the golden mussels, however, because they have a wider environmental tolerance range. So they can thrive in waters with lower calcium and more salinity and brackish waters. Next slide, please. Following the discovery of the golden mussels, DBW has joined an interagency team led by CDFW to collaborate and respond to this new threat. Each team has a focus on a certain aspect regarding these mussels, and DBW has been and is involved with the functions listed in the second bullet on the slide. Next slide, please. So as mentioned in the previous slide, this year we worked collaboratively as part of the Golden Muscle Outreach and Education team. This team is a subgroup of the Golden Muscle Task Force, which was created as an effort to initiate collaboration and coordination between state, federal, and local agencies. Through the outreach and education team, we were able to create several outreach materials, including new RAC cards, posters and signs, and even a webpage to house our outreach materials for water body management agencies across to access these resources. And just an example of some of the RAC cards, both in English and in Spanish, for people to get information on invasive mussels. Next slide, please. As referenced in your packets, there will be changes to the existing grant program pursuant to the new Assembly Bill AB 149. This discussion only pertains to DBW's implementation of this bill, as there are other portions of the bill that will be implemented by other agencies such as CDFW. Our director, Armando Quintero, has appointed a technical advisory group, and a kickoff meeting occurred on January 22nd. The purpose of the TAG, or the technical advisory group, is to recommend a new fee structure for the muscle fee sticker. It's important to note that invasive muscle work, including golden muscle, will be directly fundable for this program. Regulatory changes are required to ensure the success of the next grant program in 2027, and success includes submitting and receiving approval for two grant regulatory packages, one for the grant program and one for the muscle fee sticker. Next slide, please. And here we have four pertinent web links for the QZ grant program. The first one is DMV's direct link to purchase the muscle fee sticker, as well as the handy QR code boaters can scan to purchase the muscle fee sticker. The second is DBW's information on invasive mussels. This webpage includes information on the muscle fee sticker, golden mussels, and has a link to a list of water bodies with contact information and their conditions. The third is DBW's QZ grant information. We post solicitation and grant-related information there. And the fourth is the new Invasive Mussels Toolkit. It's a location where DBW will post outreach materials for water body managers. These materials have been created through the collaboration of the Golden Mussel Outreach and Education Task Force team. And if you'd like to help us spread the word about the muscle fee sticker, you can obtain free boater handouts like the one I'm holding here, front and back, by emailing our grant at musclegrant@parks.ca.gov. And with that, I would like to thank you.
Great. Thank you for your presentation. I believe we have a green card.
We do, Chair. I'd like to call up Jerry Desmond, and he would like to comment on Section 7, Subsection C, Mussels.
Mr. Desmond.
Mr. Desmond.
Afternoon, Chair and members. Jerry Desmond, on behalf of Recreational Boaters of California, just emphasizing, as we're all learning, the importance of this issue. We have a couple of concerns to raise. One is that the boaters are finding that the waterways, they travel from one waterway to another reservoir, and there's a inability to ensure that they're going to have a decontaminated boat at one reservoir can go to another reservoir and have that accommodation between the different water managers, all of whom have authority, you know, to ensure that that water is safe and that there isn't an infestation. Second is that the golden mussel appears to be a different kind of beast in terms of infesting a water body. So we're afraid that as we develop these possible programs to provide for boat inspections at $150 and decontamination and standards for that and sharing, that we are still not going to prevent the infestations. It's already happening in the water project. And then a third is that none of this addresses the source of the invasive species entering into the water bodies, which is, from all we can tell, it's a commercial vessel in Stockton. So we have the port of Stockton as sort of the ground zero for a number of these infestations. And then the fourth is to make sure that what is the plan going forward once we have the infestations? So if we are able to prevent the infestation through all the boat inspections and the decontamination, and you end up with the reservoirs infested, are we really building an infrastructure for something that is just a phase one that we're going to lose in the short term or medium term anyway? What are the long-term solutions when there is an infestation? And so we're engaged on that and all these issues. And I know that not just RBOC, but the boating industry groups that all our other stakeholders are all engaged. So is Fish and Wildlife and, of course, DBW. But I want to raise the importance of this because it's a real threat to boating in California. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Desmond. Any hands raised on the issue?
No, Chair, no hands raised.
Okay, do we have any commissioners who would like to speak on the issue or have any questions? Please.
Thank you for the presentation. I'm very happy to see that there is a toolkit, as communications and education is important. I'm interested in sharing this with my community down in Southern California, so I will be reaching out to get some materials to the chambers, as that is one of the first places that a lot of recreationalists go to pick up information, and so this would be an important place to do a lot of that outreach and impact. Also interested in the comment that was provided recently about what is the long-term solution and what are we doing as a state to combat the issue for all the mussels. You know, one thing that I did last year is talk to Congressman McClintock's office about this issue. And what I realized is that not that many of our federal elected officials are in conversation about this, but I think that that is one key point to address this at the national level, recognizing that we are not just one body of water that is California state lines. It continues, and it will impact other states. So having larger conversations, getting more of the states and our Congress members aware of these issues is going to impact the way that we message this out to our community members. So just want to bring that to light, that I did bring this up to Congress member McClintock's office. They are concerned about the issue, and I think that the more we talk to those offices, that we can have a better impact on how we address this here at the state of California. Thank you.
Anyone else? Please.
I'm curious in what steps the Board of Stockton has taken up to now, or their involvement in prevention, if you will.
Hi, Eddie Hard, Chief of AIS. Good question. The Port of Stockton is in direct communication with the State Lands Commission, which has jurisdiction over all maritime vessels that come in and out of the ocean to Stockton, Deepwater Port, as well as Sacramento. And they are aware of what ship it is, but they are not actively pursuing going after that particular ship. What they did when that ship entered that waterway, they put out a bulletin on the entire West Coast to notify Tacoma and Portland that that vessel was in transit to that location. But at that point, the damage was done, right? They just notified, pay attention to that vessel. So I can't comment on what the port or local agencies are going to do or won't do to pursue any sort of legal action. That has come up at a recent conference at Natural Resource Agency where we held a Delta forum where State Lands did go through and walk through their surveillance process with all ocean-coming vessels into the bay, for example, and what processes they may or may not be changing as a result of this incident. So good question.
Yeah, I don't see it any different than them causing a hazardous material issue, a pollution issue, if that vessel operator, vessel company owner had caused that within the Stockton. I think everybody would be asking for mitigation,
right,
and trying to hold them accountable, so it would be,
right,
yeah.
I think some of the challenges that they're finding from the kind of the deconstructing of the incident is that the hulls of these vessels that are ocean going but come into inland ports is they don't have the appropriate biofouling coating inside the hull. So even if they do ballast water exchange, either the hull has eroded so that those anti-fouling coatings aren't working as effectively as they should have been, and also increase in surveillance because State Lands has the authority to board vessels. Mm-hmm. Because they have a marine invasive species program that charges each vessel for a marine invasive species to attempt to resolve some of these conflicts that may arise in inland waters?
Commissioner Hallahan.
Thank you, gentlemen, for your presentation. That was really great. Did you go to that conference, California Natural Resources, is the one you mentioned that you all went? Did you speak at that conference?
No.
I've been going to we have something, the San Francisco Bay Safety Commission, and I've been going to that, and pretty much every meeting they talk about this. But I didn't know about this state lands or natural. It was a conference I would have been interested in listening or going and checking out. Was that recorded and posted?
Yes, we can provide you that information.
The link
all
to
the PowerPoints and discussion that was had there, yes.
Okay, that would be great. I'm interested because a lot of people are asking me. I go to the PICYA, which is like all the yacht clubs that come together, and what they're talking about is this economic downturn for a lot of the Delta small businesses, the mom-and-pop places. This summer was even worse than COVID, because at least COVID had some things happening, but people just were really afraid to bring their boats around, and so people are closing, like, you know, where they have their mega great months in the summer and they couldn't even open their doors or pay their staff. So it's really breaking down the system, as you know, as you see all the time. But we need to make sure people understand that. So thank you for your great work, and hopefully we can get some more protections.
Anything further? So, and maybe this is a question for the deputy director, but the sticker fees go to the DBW program, as you've just outlined for us. Got that part right?
Yes.
Okay. But you also mentioned in your presentation that there's deleterious effects on infrastructure, which is really be the entire California water system. And so you mentioned that state lands charges fees to vessels that come into the state of California, right, for their marine invasive species program. We had discussed at one point the thought that other water district users who benefit from the restriction, or hopefully not the elimination, will never get there, but reducing the invasiveness. Here's my question, okay? Are we getting any dough from anyone else, or is this whole program funded by the stickers and boaters are kind of bearing the brunt of what is a program that benefits a lot of people, farmers, water districts, et cetera? So that's the question. I don't know who wants to answer that, or if there's even a question
I'll answer
in there. Yeah.
So different programs. So you'll hear about the Aquatic Invasive Species Program, Aquatic Invasive Plant Control Program, which will be next.
Right.
But that's the program that you're speaking of. This is actually the invasive mussels. So it's a different program. This program is funded. So in short, this fund is funded through mussel fee stickers from boaters.
Exclusively?
Yes.
Okay. So even though there's a PG&E turbine that's coming off of a reservoir, and they would benefit from not having zebra mussels in their turbines and everything like that. There's no, it's all on the boaters to fund these programs. Is that? No. Okay, good.
No, as we've kind of saw from yesterday in the workshop, it's an all hands on deck to address all these issues relative to recreational boating, right? And so with the outline of the staff talking about how this grant program through the department rolls out to water body owners and managers, if I'm PG&E, for example, those turbines, we don't have anything to do with our grant program to assist them with that. That's their own ratepayers. They have the power of the purse. They will take money aside under their own operational budget to address those issues. The only focus that the division has through recreational boaters is to provide the recreational access to us to a point where we can attempt to ensure that that water body is remaining free from invasive mussels. That's our niche. Whoever owns, whether it's this facility we're sitting at right here, which is operated by the Bureau of Reclamation but managed by State Parks, BOR has the power of the purse to ensure that, you know, this dam, Lake Natoma, Nimbus Dam, does not have invasive mussels. Same with PG&E, the Department of Water Resources, Army Corps of Engineers, so on and so forth. So our aim is only recreational access to prevent the introduction and the spread and establishment of these, so it doesn't impact boaters. But the owner of all the apaturient works, the dam, the power plant, that is on the onus of the owner, not the recreational boater. Okay. So this is a shared responsibility. This is what was on the news last night, where the San Joaquin County Farm Bureau was talking about what are we going to do with all these golden mussels that are impacting mm-hmm. our water delivery system. It's on the grower. It's on anybody who pulls the water out. So that's, you know, the delta is not a reservoir. We're sitting on a reservoir here today, so that's where this program has impact, only on reservoirs.
Right. Okay, I understand that. Okay.
Okay, good.
That's good. And I also just like to commend you what I think is a great success rate of just having one transference of mussels to various reservoirs or applicants or whatever you have. So that's, I mean, I find that to be, frankly, a little amazing. But that's me. Is there anything else, Ramona? Okay, anyone else? Okay, let's move on. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Okay, so next agenda item is item number 8.
Thank you so much.
That is number 8, sub D, which, as just alluded to, is the Aquatic Invasive Plant Control Program.
All right. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, commissioners, and everyone else here today. My name is Jeffrey Caudill, and I'm the program supervisor for the Aquatic Invasive Plant Control Program, here to provide an update. Next slide, please. So the program history is based off the authorizing legislation that you see on the slide here today, which starts with Senate Bill 1344 in 1982, which gave the then department, now division, lead agency status in order mm-hmm. to detect, control, and monitor for aquatic invasive species, plants specifically, in the Delta, the Sassoon Marsh, and the Southern Tributaries. AB 2193 and AB 1540 added two different invasive plants to the program's target list, Aegeria densa and sponge plant respectively, and that added more to the program authority in terms of looking for target plants. AB 763 added a risk assessment process where the California Department of Fish and Wildlife works with several other local, state, and federal agencies to determine if future plants would be target plants for the program. So this was no longer decided at the legislative level, but it went down to the state level. And the California Conservation Corps Partnership, which is SB 704, was added to help our program with resources in times of need when the staffing was not available for the current needs of the Aquatic Invasive Plant Control Program in the Delta. Next slide, please. Here is a project map of the locations that the division has in their area of responsibility, all the way down to the Fryant Dam, up to the I Street Bridge, and through Sassoon Marsh. Next slide, please. Oh, this is about 101,000 water acres. So, as the lead agency, DBW AIPCP cooperates with local, state, and federal agencies to manage aquatic invasive plants that are deemed a threat to the environment, economy, and public health. The goals of the program are to control the aquatic invasive plants through detection, identification, and monitoring and control efforts. As new aquatic invasive plants show up, eradication efforts may be possible when working with local, state, and federal agencies. Next slide, please. There are many beneficiaries with our program at the local, state, and federal levels, as you can see on the slide here. Collaborations with the Department of Water Resources Fish Restoration Program and consistency with the Delta Plan, with the Delta Stewardship Council, to name some state agencies, while agricultural commissioners, growers, deep water shipping channels, and local businesses such as marinas will also benefit at the local level, along with boaters. Next slide, please. So, DBW AIPCP has collaborated with DWR for the past 6 years to work together on the fish restoration program. And I've got an example to show you a little later. Next slide, please. So this is a map of the fish restoration program sites managed by DWR. And these are sites throughout the Delta and Sassoon Marsh, such as Winter Islands, Liberty Island areas, and a number of other areas that you see here that we partner with the DWR through a reimbursement contract they have with us in order to help them control these sites. Next slide, please. So this is a picture of Lookout Slough, one of the many sites that we've been working on with DWR, and this is a site that we paid pretty close attention to over the last year. Once construction was complete in October of last year, we have been working with DWR on trying to manage that site through the reimbursement contract. And since it's a very new addition to the waterways, it gave us an opportunity to show the program's benefits to an area that had started off with no weed invasion. Next slide, please. So the Lookout Slough Channel became a part, as I mentioned, of the Delta in October of 2004. And control efforts began in September of 2005 due to many planning challenges, conversations with many local and federal agencies for the program work that we do, and to determine any benefits and realized function of the site per these other agencies. The site was aggressively managed through a treatment approach that we don't normally apply to many of the sites due to resource limitations. So to define that very quickly, normally the program at high priority sites probably is able to conduct treatments two or three times throughout a year in a specific site. Because of the reimbursement contract that we had with DWR and the needs for keeping this program or this area under control, we ended up treating about half of the channels here per the direction of DWR about 8 or 9 times in the second half of the treatment season, which is March 1st to November 30th. So in this particular slide, too, though it may be too small to read, over the month that we were monitoring some of the sites, we ended up having about 14% of biomass in the area. So if you take the waterway at a slightly higher tide and you estimate through our hydroacoustic monitoring samples how much weed mass might be taking up in that waterway, it was about 14%. And at a low tide, it's going to be much higher. And through the aggressive treatment regime that I had mentioned that we had utilized here, we ended up getting it down to about 7% later in the year, and it ended up at about 5% by the time that our treatment program had concluded for the year of 2025. Next slide, please. So another monitoring tool to showcase the efforts and some of the successes of the program, we use satellite imagery from the Sentinel-2 satellites. We've cooperated with NASA on this. And this is going to show that between the years of 2024 and 2025, we have found that our program, if you can see down here on the bottom half of the slide, has been able to control the high priority sites roughly about the same as sites that we don't control because they are either a lesser priority or they don't have as much aquatic invasive plants in them. So we send our crews and our staff and our subcontractors to areas that really need the help to make sure we prevent issues from navigation, boating recreation, or boating accessibility. And this is just an opportunity for us to show that we're using a kind of a larger monitoring tool that allows us to see the delta to find out how the program has been performing. Next slide, please. So we have a number of program challenges that we're working with, such as managing expectations for all stakeholders and environmental challenges that change every single year. All stakeholders expect a certain level of help from the division and the program, but the program resources unfortunately do not allow all of the full extent of the help that everyone's expecting for us to be able to provide. Regulatory requirements due to endangered species also restrict some of the program actions in the area of the Delta, which present additional challenges to producing good control or providing good control. And since every year is different, we have to be very adaptive. And this year's, 1 year's approach may not work the next. Next slide, please. We have had many collaboration successes throughout the year. We've worked collaboratively with several state and federal agencies, such as DWR, CDFW, and USDA, who they've helped us with federal permits, and they've helped us with funding opportunities through reimbursement contracts like the one that I mentioned earlier. CDFW has also provided us some funding to help with their nutrient eradication efforts in areas that are generally low priority for the program, kind of in the southern tributary south of the Delta. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services have also provided us with funds to help at some of the federal refuges that they oversee. And we're also working with the Army Corps and the Coast Guard for improved physical control methods that we might be able to use in the future for this program. Next slide, please. So I do want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the commissioners, and everyone else here today, allowing me the opportunity to talk about the AIPCP. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. Do we have any public comment?
We do not have any public comments.
Okay. Do I have any of my fellow commissioners who would like to make a comment on the matter? Commissioner Hallahan.
Hi. Thank you so much for your presentation. Of course, we have some new commissioners here. I've been here 2 years, and it keeps coming up, you know, this mitigation work that you're doing, and just want to say it's really amazing. The Department of Water Resources, what is their actual mandate? What is their job in this? I know that you said that the state has now said that our department, DBW, is in charge of certain things in the Delta. What is their mandate?
So the Department of Water Resources is in charge of several mandates, but the one that we're working on with them specifically in these sites, sorry, I'm not close enough to the microphone, they have to restore tidal wetland acres. This is mitigation for other projects, whether it has to do with tunnels or other projects that have been happening over the past 20 or so years that require mitigation for endangered species at the federal and state level. So they have to restore around 8,000 tidal wetland acres, and when they undergo construction to create new wetland acres, such as the Liberty Island area lookout slough that I had mentioned, they have created new waterways, they're going to need management. And while they do have to create the waterways, they also have to make sure that the waterways are maintained to be able to provide benefits and habitat and critical habitat for all of these endangered species. And when they're finding when they open up these sites to be able to meet the 8,000 tidal wetland restoration acres that they're aiming for, they also create a haven of, unfortunately, invasive plants, and too many invasive plants do not allow these areas to be restored to the level where they would be of a benefit for the endangered species. Does that help answer your question?
That is so interesting, because you're trying to make good, but you could make bad easily by opening up something to an invasive species. And when you say waterways, do you mean waterways for, you know, swimming mammals, or do you mean boats? Waterways?
They are publicly accessible waterways. The primary goal is to help endangered species such as, say, Delta smelt or salmon. Could these be areas that are publicly accessible for boaters? Absolutely.
So these could be areas that a shallow motorboat or fishing people could go, cruise around. They're accessible for
yes.
Our boating community?
Yes, that is correct.
Thank you so much.
Anyone else? Commissioner Idsafter.
Well, thank you, first of all, for an excellent presentation. I was curious to learn a little bit more about water hyacinth specifically. I know that one is a big threat to boaters in the Delta and elsewhere in our state. How have you seen that threat evolve over time? Just looking back, say, over the last 5 years or so?
That's a fair question. So the program started because of water hyacinth back in 1982. That was the primary motivator for the program and the needs to find funding to be able to tackle this issue. So over the past 5 years, we've actually seen a bit of a reduction in the amount of water hyacinth. However, we also have three other floating aquatic vegetation species, as we have called them, and they have sometimes they take up the gap, which water hyacinth would leave behind. So if our efforts were very successful against water hyacinth, maybe something like a water primrose might be taking up some of that extra, we'll call it real estate, that's been opened up. But one of the many reasons why we have focused our efforts on water hyacinth beyond the reason that it started the program is because it's a true floating plant that can move. So the inability to control a plant through the end of, say, November, unfortunately means it's going to clog a lot of waterways in the winter when we are unable to have control efforts occur. And so one of the main priorities we have, especially in maybe the third the last third of our program is to focus on water hyacinth areas to prevent other areas that haven't had any aquatic invasive plants be impacted based on water flows from water hyacinth moving around. So we think we've been successful on the water hyacinth front. The program, unfortunately, as I mentioned, lacks the resources to be able to control all, say, 100 and 1,000 acres to the extent that we and other stakeholders would like. But we feel we've got a pretty good handle on the water hyacinth issue specifically.
Anyone else? I think your efforts have been very commendable from what I understand. If I understood what you said you went from 14% coverage down to about 5% coverage. So I'd just like to commend you for a job well done. I'm a little curious, does that fluctuate between drought and wet years?
Yes.
And how does it fluctuate?
So yes, the challenge with these plants based on water temperatures in a drought season when the water temperatures tend to be warmer, the plants have a longer growing season and an earlier growing season. So that means, unfortunately, we might be fighting to stay behind by the time our program begins in some cases. But as I mentioned before, the resource allocations mean we can only cover so much ground. And there's going to be more areas of concern for whether it's submersed aquatic vegetation or floating aquatic vegetation. All aquatic vegetation that are invasive in plants are an issue in drought because you're going to see the populations explode quite a bit more.
Okay.
But we have the same resources every year.
Okay, so in wet years... What I'm hearing is in wet years, like we've had two wet years now, or maybe three. So that coverage of the hyacinth, however you pronounce it, would naturally be less. Is that more or less accurate?
In general, it is. When I mentioned that environmental conditions can change every year, if we have a really wet year with a lot of water flows because of the water levels that rise near the levees, we are asked in many areas and counties not to do any boating.
Okay.
So even if the plants are going to have a slower time growing and impeding other waterways, we can't have any control efforts by boat either on some of these areas because the waterways are shut down to boating.
Okay. Great. And then finally, just a you want to let me just? I actually have a nerd question because you were kind enough to give us a tour of your facility. I think we discussed in Stockton, and I think there was some. You showed us the various vessels you used to do this, and at that time, I think it was 2 years ago, you were exploring some other methods of are they herbicides? I don't know what it is. It's probably not important. But are you like drone usage or things of that nature? Like I say, it's just a nerd question. I'm not trying to drill you down.
No, it's a great question. Yeah. We've actually used more drones. So we have a consultant that we've been using. This helps out with a lot of these partnerships or reimbursement contracts because we aren't staffed to be able to give all of these different stakeholders what they need. And we found that drones have actually had a good use in areas that boats have historically not been so successful. So if we were to take this room and fill it up with plants, the boats might be able to spray within 10 feet of a doorway because that's the only entrance, whereas a drone can hit everything. And so the advantage there is they actually have a chance to completely control an area to the extent that we've never been able to before without, say, mechanical harvesting, which is generally pretty slow, effective, slow, and very expensive, very resource intensive. So drones have worked. And I did mention very briefly, though I didn't go into a lot of detail, there are physical controls that we're looking at in order to try and make our control efforts go farther. And we are still working with the Army Corps and the U.S. Coast Guard to try and find permits and benefits to these efforts.
Yeah, very interesting. Did you have something further?
Yet another geek question. When we were there in Stockton to one of the facilities, I think they were using like a Roundup Monsanto chemical spray, and they were like really saying that this is very specific for hyacinth, and very specific, and there was not finding any damage. Is that still the case now that you're finding that this chemicals that you're using is not damaging our water?
So as far as we know, yes. So beyond endangered species impact, which we've worked with federal agencies and state and local agencies on these, We found that the invasive plants have a larger, more negative impact on a lot of the waterways, water mm-hmm. quality, and water species within compared to the chemicals that we're using to control them. Mm-hmm. When you look at, say, the eight counties within the Delta, within our regions that are being used, and you want to take glyphosate as one, what we've done is we've taken a look at how many, say, pounds of active ingredients are being used, and we're below 0.1% of the amount of glyphosate that's used in the area. There is a lot of agriculture and a lot of other use, right, commercial uses that may drive into that. The second thing we've done is we've tried to be more adaptive with the program. So in order to combat something called herbicide resistance, basically if you spray 100 plants and one survives, that plant is going to have other plants and seeds that are going to grow. So the next time you spray those 100 plants with one chemical, you might have five of them are going to resist it, which makes your control efforts less effective as time goes on. We've actually combined glyphosate with another active ingredient called imazamox, and we found that it pretty much eradicates everything because you're using kind of two different paths to control the plants, which has been more successful. So even though it increases the amount of, say, cost per acre that we're controlling, it allows you to not have to go back to control that same acre as frequently. So we're able to treat more unique areas instead of having to control, if you will, mow the lawn, if you want to say it that way, you know, multiple times.
Well, that's so interesting. Are you working with Fish and Game, and if they're testing fish to see if these chemicals are in the fish, or is there any, like, downstream testing going on?
So there may be. We are not engaged in that, and we're not aware of that. In terms of whatever they may be testing. I do know that USGS conducts studies probably every year or two with the kind of chemical concentrations that they do find in the water, and we've not been alerted to any kind of issues with the chemicals that we tend to use.
It'll be interesting just to float out there the chemicals you are, and if they want to put it on their panel when they're doing testing, either water or fish or something. Be nice, you know, but this sounds, you sound like a medical doctor or something, hitting it, you know, for our waterways of California. So thank you so much.
Okay. Seeing nothing further, we are going to move on to our final agenda item for the for this meeting, which is simply administrative items. And on the printed agenda that has been published, it says chair to establish nomination committees for our up-and-coming meeting in May for officers of this commission. After consultation with counsel, I am of the understanding that I do not need to establish a nomination committee at this juncture, so I'm going to decline to do that. I may be reaching out to other members of the commission individually to see if they would be willing to participate in that process, and if no one raises a hand to be on a nomination committee after I contact them individually, we can still proceed with elections at the May 5th commission meeting, sort of the nomination commission. The idea is that that sort of helps smooth line the process. So that said, I believe we have no locations for any of the further commission meetings established at this time, but I will just state for the record that our next meeting will be May 6th and 7th. The quarterly three meeting will be August 11th and 12th. And my mother's birthday, by the way, but she probably will not raise an objection. And then quarterly four meeting will be November 4th and 5th. So with that, with nothing else heard, Commissioner. Pardon me, I almost banged the gavel. Suggested agenda items for next meeting. So I'll turn that over either to Commissioner Hallahan or Commissioner Stader. So why don't we, do you want to go ahead?
I would like to make a motion. At our last meeting, Commissioner Hallahan and I presented the first report of the subcommittee on boat slips. And as a follow-up to that, we would like to now conduct the secondary research and feedback work based on that primary research and all the data collected by surveying and interviewing the boating communities to validate or falsify the hypotheses that we presented at our last meeting in San Diego as part of that report. That is my motion, that we be authorized to publish and conduct a survey which would be on the website and also interview people across the boating communities in California.
Please.
Can I add to this a little bit? So we're doing this together with a ad hoc that was already given to us by the chair, and we completed it in November, and we extended it to this meeting to talk about it more. And our feedback is that a lot of boating community has had things to say about what we produced in our ad hoc, and we want to keep track of that data. And so we put together a questionnaire that's anonymous, and we want to be able to fill it out when we're talking to people. This is not going to be a scientific thing where, you know, in every county we get this many people. It's not going to be, we're not going to base potential funding or anything like that. This is just a light initial analysis of what people had to feedback on our ad hoc. So it's a questionnaire, and I don't know if we can approve it this time or in the next meeting and talk about it more, but we wrote the questionnaire up, and I think it would be nice to have it on the commissioner's site so people could download it, and I'm totally happy that people could just, I've always wanted to put my email, my parks email, on my bio, on my where the commissioner website is, and I'm happy to collect them myself and put them together and run them through AI and see what it says and, you know, get that data together for us for our research. So is this something that would be on the next meeting that we could do it, or can you just authorize us to continue our research?
Well, it seems like it's a two-pronged question, right? So the first question is whether and who would approve your questionnaire. And we don't have that before us now. So I don't know. This is a Catherine question. And then the second is once we have an approved questionnaire, who has the authority to place that on the commission website? Where does that authority reside? One might think that it resides with the commission. So two prongs, right? Getting an approval of a questionnaire. Otherwise, you know, you could, you know, do you like hot redheads or do you like, you know, that's not appropriate. And so we have to have some approval process for the questionnaire. And then the second is where does it get and what is the approval process for posting that?
So I think the appropriate way to do this is that what they're asking you to do as chair is to basically continue their work. And so once you authorize that as a committee, then they can work with staff. And, of course, you know, the questionnaires would all have to be, you know, reviewed and all of that. So I don't think you really need, as chair, to get into the weeds, so to speak, on, you know, those kinds of things. What you would do is authorize them to continue doing that work and to work with staff so that all those reviews are taken
okay,
care
so
of.
I will... Obviously, I'm going to authorize. So, but we have a motion on the floor now.
Well, you don't. So, you don't really need to have a motion unless you refuse to, you know, be reasonable about it in the long run. And then, if let's say, for instance, you didn't want to see that committee move forward, if you didn't do that, then the commissioners could come back and put it to a motion. But the first request is really to just ask the chair to continue the work of the committee.
Okay. So the chair requests that the subcommittee, the ad hoc committee, continue their work, and we would be presented with a finished questionnaire, at our next meeting.
I want to do it now. Like, I have the we have the questionnaire prepared, and we're ready to send it to you and the Deputy Director Fernandez.
Okay.
And we're ready to do that. We'll do it at the end of this meeting, as long as you give us the authorization to continue our work.
Okay. You have the authorization, my authorization, to continue your work. Now I'm not clear what happens with the publication of the work once it's been presented to staff. Because the objective here is to make the questionnaire an official document that is published and that people can access. So what is that process? Does that need to come back to the commission as an agenda item in May 5?
No, because they're working with staff to do this.
Okay. All right. So the understanding is that they're going to give you the questionnaire, you guys are going to review it, and then
it'll be a product of the division in that.
Okay, and then you will publish it as soon as reasonably as necessary, right? Okay. All right. Does that work for everyone? And then there was a further question, which is not an agenda item, just a question, general conversation, it's this new ADA requirement, and there was a big work product that the subcommittee or the ad hoc committee produced at the last meeting that did not get published because there was only the first three pages got published because of a lot of it was, you know, what is the status of that is what I'm trying to say, because I think they would prefer that the entire report be published.
I'll have to look into that and let you guys know, because I don't know what the status is.
Okay.
I know that there was lots of, it's the data, right?
It's the data, yeah, that's the problem. Yeah.
So do we all understand what the problem is with the ADA requirement?
Please.
So the problem is that documents have to be accessible by everybody and anybody. So when we get documents like that, it basically has to be reviewed by staff. And one of the large problems is that when you have a lot of tables and that type of material, what needs to be done is that needs to almost be translated into verbiage so that you're understanding that anybody can read those. So let's say, for example, that you are, you know, hard of hearing and you're listening to a report being read. If the tables aren't completely explained, but let's just say somebody makes a summary and says, well, this table says X, then that person can't access the table. So there needs to be a more complete explanation of what's in the table. So this is something that we're grappling with on a lot of different fronts, as you can imagine. And it is time consuming.
Let me ask you this. Is there a state office of accessibility mm-hmm. that we can send? I mean that seriously, because I don't want you guys to spend a lot of staff time working on this to be compliant with the California ADA. I just don't know.
I do believe,
and I should not have scoffed, by the way, because I'm very sensitive to ADA issues, and I just was kind of surprised that you're going to have to, you know, get this in a non-visual format, and that means an audio format. But please.
So I do believe that the department, and I'll be looking into this, does have a contract that we work through with to give the information to. I mean, we have a department-wide contract, or contractor.
Please.
So I can reduce the data because I was taking that from a 2019 Clean Water Act data point, you know, so it had all the Excel sheets, which a lot of people think is really interesting, but I could summarize it. No. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Now, with that, I will declare the meeting adjourned.